Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Past the hour, and here we are live, the 21st day of August 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you go this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Where you go to get access to the chat room. Jump right in. It's free and easy to navigate, negotiate, what have you. We'll be here during the pendency of the program. Next 3 hours or so, absolutely. We always have a good time in the chat room. It's the full multimedia experience in real time, you know, as opposed to fake time, right? Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yeah, this is The Horn, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, a day dedicated to things that make us go, don't! Yeah, from, from the denizens of the right. The Republicans, the Libertarians, the John Birchers, the Birthers, the Deathers, the Tenthers, the Booger Eaters, the Baggers, and what have you. Because, you know, they've got a real talent for it. Yep. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find access to the pop-out stream player. Listen live button is real easy if you happen to be listening on a PC. If you're on some sort of a mobile device, here in the second decade of the 21st century. That's going to sound so cute and archaic someday down the line. Maybe when the aliens start listening to the broadcast. We recommend the apps from Stitcher or TuneIn. With the reminder that, none of the ads that run there go to support The Horn. No, if you see some odious message on Stitcher or TuneIn that kind of gags you, like say maybe it's an ExxonMobil ad or something like that, please remember, none of that keeps any of this going. We get not a penny, not a sausage from them. That's all their own profit generation. Us, we're not so much about profit. We're about keeping the conversation going. That's why we try to raise the princely sum of $150 every broadcast evening. $150, my goodness gracious. Just imagine how we divvy it up. I mean, there's the rent for the hangar on the Gulfstream 5. There's the maintenance for the Maybach. Yeah. Just keeping the bright work polished on the Horn yacht is a job in and of itself. And then there's Agnes's masseur and the cabana boy and the pool boy. You know, when they don't get paid, they start giving you some real dirty looks. Yeah. And all of that out of $150 per evening. And then we pay all the other stuff that actually makes all of this go. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. We need to raise $150. That's 15 at 10, 2 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 1 at 150, 3 at 50, 1 at 100, and another at 50. Let's see, 6 at 25, 12 at 1250. That's about as much long division as I can do on any one given evening. Here on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, so, and by the way, I should mention, you know, if you just the PayPal button is where you want to go if you want to help keep all this going. It is all entirely a volunteer effort. Nobody has to pay for anything. Nobody gets charged for anything. You want the podcast? Go get the podcast. The feed address is over at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. Go get it. No charge. You want to listen to the stream? No charge. 24/7, as long as, well, our craptastic internet provider maintains its connection, 24/7, it's there. Access it. No charge. Chat room? No charge. No charge for anything. This is a cooperative effort. So that when you choose to support the horn, what happens is, well, you're making it possible for people who can't. Some people can, some people can't, some people can sometimes, other people can't other times, and it all works together. It all works together to keep all the plates spinning for the entire community. Neat, huh? Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very kindly, Paul. We are now on our way for the evening's fundraising goal. Paul noting, this should help you with restocking the cocktail napkins on the Gulf Stream. Those cocktail napkins don't come cheap, I'll have you know. I mean, they're embossed and they're in four colors. It's a heck of a print job. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly. So we will now, we'll work on the rest of the goal now that Paul has gotten us started. Thanks. Now, theoretically, we were supposed to be beginning the program with a conversation. I mean, it is conversation radio, but not just any conversation. A conversation with the founder of something that has gotten a lot of traction here in Central Appalachia, a founder of the Friends of Water movement. That call was supposed to be coming in about 2 minutes ago. And I'm going to try to see if I can find out what's going on. Someday I will have a production staff. Just 1 second. Well, hopefully we'll hear we'll hear from Chris Hale in fairly short order. Okay. Yeah, this is a little awkward. But it has been known to happen before. Oh, well. So, where to pick up then as we wait to find out if we're going to have this conversation? Oh,
Paul, time out. Stand by. I'm just going to take care of this. I think we may have the contact that we were looking for. Is that you, Chris?
Oh, it's Chris. How are you?
I'm good, Chris. I'm good. I'm glad you called in. We were all just sitting, waiting with bated breath, as it were. I'm glad to get a chance to talk to you and bring you on and introduce you to the Horn Family Commune Congregation. Chris Hale is a West Virginian like me, and you are a Fayette Countyan like me, and as such, you've started a little activist movement here in the area. More and more people are displaying that iconic Friends of Water sticker on their car, and other places as well. What was the genesis of the whole thing, Chris?
Well, I started in the Virginia water crisis when the tank farm failed along the river there in Charleston, and I noticed that we weren't getting the national and international coverage that we needed. Although the local reporters did a fine job, people like Ken Ward Jr. were knocking it out of the park over at the Charleston Gazette in terms of providing people with the information to be updated about the water crisis. We were dealing with a chemical data safety sheets were incorrect. The studies were not adequate, and we ended up with a chemical being spilled in the water that affects people's red blood cells. It causes leukemia. It's really bad stuff, and it's in the same family of dispersants that actually is causing the toxic algae bloom in the Gulf right now. So not only do we have toxic algae blooms in the Gulf, we also have them going on in the Great Lakes, affecting the water of over 300,000 people in Michigan weeks ago. And we've got all of the crises at once. We've got bombs going off and tar sands oil and that sort of thing spilling into waterways. We've got fracking fluid with radium-226 and 228 in our water that the DEP can't even check for, that only the DHHR can check. And they're not even checking for the right type of radiation. And we've got to look into the tinorm issue. But anyway, moving on, the greater crisis is that small government and less regulation brought us the West Virginia water crisis. And now we're in a situation where we know better. And we know we have to safeguard our water supply. We have to keep it free of chemicals, toxins, and contaminants. And furthermore, we're going to fight for your human right, Bob, to have access to that water supply. Are you with me?
Been there for a long time. Absolutely. You raise a lot in a very short amount of time, Chris. I want to phrase this in such a way as to make it as all-encompassing as possible. You said that you felt like we weren't the water disaster. I just call it the Freedom Disaster now, by the way.
Correct.
It's
Freedom
not the
Industries.
It's not the Freedom Industries disaster. It's the Freedom Disaster.
A big dose of freedom. Too much freedom of polluters to affect the water supply. Make no mistake, Bob, this is a violent crime. Pollution is a violent crime and should be punished as such. We're talking about human capital here. We're talking about grandbabies. We're talking about the legacy we're going to leave for them. Are we going to leave them a river or a creek full of poison? Are we going to leave them a flat mountaintop that can't actually be remediated, that can't be reforested, that will take 100,000 years to actually gain adequate topsoil to reforest? We can't continue to do that, Bob. We have to look at clean energy as a way to get out of this model of ratepayers versus shareholders. Energy independence is coming. Solar panels are going to free you from paying monthly rates to big energy companies, and we can put the power of the sun into the hands of local and state communities and do co-ops, do solar leasing programs. That's the thing. You know, you can pay it forward, you can pay up front, or you can pay later. And usually the monthly rate that you pay later is much higher. And that's what we're dealing with fossil fuel industry. Fracking is not safe, Bob. We've got issues, okay? We are contaminating the water supply. We have explosions. I am working a political campaign in my spare time for Diana Strickland. She's running for Kanawha County Commissioner because her county commissioner failed her during the water crisis. They had the power to step up and speak to the failures of the governor, and they did not do that. So Diana was affected by the derecho. She was affected by that pipeline explosion in Sissonville. That shut her down for a second time. The water crisis, that was the crucial third strike, and she was out. And it shut down her bakery for good. Now she's running for Kanawha County Commissioner because she has a story to tell, a cautionary tale. And she's ready to lead, Bob. She's ready to step into that office and do the right thing. Let me tell you about me. I am a national voting delegate for the Green Party. I'm also the chair of the environmental platform for the Mountain Party in West Virginia, which is our chapter of the Green Party. The Green Party is winning in England, in Australia, in California, in Canada. The Democrats and the Republicans aren't winning in four different countries right now. Are you with me?
Well, you know, I am. The fact of the matter is, you talk about the commissioner that failed Kanawha County, with very few exceptions. I can think of maybe two, three tops in West Virginia's state government. The entire political system failed. Of course, I've been arguing for 10 years now that this is a failed state, and I base that upon the fact that this is a state that cares more about people who poison others than it does about the people who are being poisoned. You know, and I was going to talk about this later this evening, but this is a good time for doing it. There was a federal district court opinion rendered this week. Are you familiar with that, Chris?
I have been knee-deep in the DEP hearings over the Kanawha State Forest and the adjacent strip mine. And I've been pretty busy, Bob. We had a 7:30 a.m. vigil yesterday morning at the DEP to show solidarity in the face of the people that were coming in for the hearing, where the community is suing the DEP and the coal company over the mountaintop removal project that failed and fouled the streams close by, and also is going to have negative effects on the park, watershed. The viewshed, most importantly, is going to suffer when we take down the mountains that people pay, you know, good tourism dollars to come see. We're talking about losing our hikers, our bikers, our birds, our bats, our bees. That land's going to turn into prairie land, and what's going to be left of this state park that once was a great, beautiful place that we protected?
Yeah, well,
court decision.
Well, okay, so
I'm ready. I bet I'm familiar with it. A number of the groups
with which I've been involved over the years, you know, I'm the president of the board of directors at Cold River Mountain Watch. They filed suit along with OVEC and some others regarding a couple of mountaintop removal permits and Army Corps applications. And the gravamen of their complaint was that the Army Corps was not taking into account the more than two dozen peer-reviewed scientific journal articles that point to a grave health crisis in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. This was heard in U.S. District Court before Judge John T. Copenhaver down Charleston Way.
You're talking about the Appalachian Community Healthcare Crisis, correct?
Well, yes. What Judge Copenhaver said, though, was, you know, the health of West Virginians who have to live around mountaintop removal doesn't really matter.
Our human capital and our property values don't matter. That's compelling.
Yeah. He said that there was nothing in the law that said the Army Corps of Engineers had to take into account whether or not a baby is born gasping for its first breath of air. He said there's nothing in the law that says the Army Corps of Engineers has to take into account 4,000 excess deaths in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties every year. There's nothing in the law there. People need to go pound sand. Coal companies have money to make. Get out of his face.
So let's talk numbers. Let's talk about the $700,000 kickback that the DNR got that they didn't ask for. It was just quote-unquote offered to them on the deal. They got 10 cents on the ton on the coal mine from the strip mine KB number 2 adjacent to the Kanawha State Forest. And let's give you some other numbers. Zero, a big goose egg. That is how many times that our director of the DNR has visited an actual mountaintop removal site. Zero. He's never seen one, but he's seen the remediation and reforestry and all these things that are like clean coal technology. They're a myth, Bob.
Oh, they absolutely are. Clean coal technology is an advertising slogan, not an actual technology.
Let me give you a couple more numbers. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. Pardon me, but while I'm passionate about this, let's talk some more numbers. $2 million. That's a total that went to Governor Earl Ray Tomlin and our state government on the deal. So the state got $2 million. DNR got $700,000, 10 cents on the ton. What did the good people of Kanawha County get? Well, they got their stream foul, Davis Creek, another waterway very close by. Another zero. The number of people who were for the strip mine project in the public comments section. Zero people spoke in favor of the project, while hundreds of people made public comment with respect to the fact that they did not want the agency to issue a permit, which they never actually did issue a proper permit or a legal permit for that matter. So with respect to that fact, we've got serious issues with whether or not the project should even be in motion. And here's the other deal. The DEP attorneys are working in tandem with coal company attorneys sitting together in the hearing. It's pretty appalling, Bob. And then also, it was quite evident the party affiliation of the chair of the hearing, the DEP, Republican chair.
It becomes pretty foully transparent pretty quickly that I've been to my fair share of these hearings, Chris. They are hearings insofar as they are. Well, they're not hearings. They're public theater. They have nothing. There's nothing about them that is related to justice, which is why, among other things, we need the. That's why my colleagues and I went and actually got the only bill in Congress that would end mountaintop removal, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act.
And I've been working with Vernon Halton with Cobble River Mountain Watch. He stood with me at a press conference along with Roland Nicklam, who did the Fast for the Mountains.
Yep.
And he was posted up at our state capitol, fasting for a long time to save this mountain. And Roland's exact words to me were, "This is not a hunger strike. This is not a protest. This is a basic plea to the humanity within each and every one of us, no matter which side you're on. And it's to be done with two things, love and determination. This is to be done for future generations for the sake of the legacy we leave behind for them."
Absolutely. The question then, let me ask, we can kind of gauge things, Chris. I think it was brilliant to take that little that little swoosh design that the Friends of Coal have propagated all over this state and turn it into Friends of Water. Do you have any idea how many of those you've distributed? Because I see a lot
I've
of them now.
I've distributed about 1,000 stickers already, and I just got more the other day. And that's the beauty of it, Bob. I'm seeing them riding up and down the highway. We have people sending in pictures from all over the country, and that's the other thing. Now we have Friends of Water, Ohio. We have Friends of Water, Colorado. We have people stepping up and starting chapters in several states, and this is a growing movement. We beat Friends of Coal in numbers on Facebook and Twitter, social media. We skunked them the week of the EPA hearings in Atlanta and Pittsburgh, and that goes to show you that the tide is turning. People are awake. They're understanding that we can't continue with this policy of intentional poisoning and allowing our legislators to pass bills that pollute our waters and poison our children.
Yeah, and to be fair, putting a sticker on a car is not necessarily the same thing as activism, but it is a first step, isn't it?
It's a statement, Bob. It's a statement that we stand for water supply free and clear of toxins, contaminants, and chemicals. We learned during the water crisis that zero parts per billion is the number we're seeking. There are no safe, acceptable levels of chemicals in the water. And furthermore, we have not followed the recommendations of the U.S. Chemical Safety Board. Three of the members, the scientists who are on that board, are members of my political party, Bob. And the thing is, they've been here four times in the last 12 years and made recommendations which have never been followed.
Never.
I tried to speak to Sherry Moore Capito, and I was blocked by one of her bodyguards during that U.S. Chemical Safety Board meeting. And I addressed the board, and I first and foremost thanked them for coming four times over the last 10 or 12 years. And secondly, I made a plea to our state and local leaders to please follow up on the recommendations of the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, because we've done nothing to safeguard our waters, to inventory tank farms. You know what? Since the water crisis, none of those tank farms have been inventoried. We don't have any solid numbers or labels on those chemicals. We don't have a proper working inventory. We can't manage it.
We don't know what, and even if we knew where what chemicals were where, we wouldn't necessarily know what their impact, as we discovered with the Freedom disaster, is on human life, human beings,
correct,
human existence, because none of it's been tested. You know,
and the tests that have been done, the tests that have been done are not conclusive, like the test for PPH and for the chemicals that spilled during the water crisis. Those tests were bad. They were not adequate to determine the health and safety impact on human beings. You know, they did some animal testing, and it was light, and it was not adequate in determining the health risk to humans. So that's why they come out right after the chemical spill and tell people, well, the water is safe to drink, but pregnant women shouldn't drink it. What does that tell you, Bob?
Well, it tells me the same thing that anybody who wants to drink the water, that's a personal choice.
Even Natalie Tennant said, well, that depends on what your definition of safe is. And she sort of lost me there, kind of like when Nick Casey lost me in his denial of climate change.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I want to go specifically into this realm of inquiry, Chris. When 300,000 people got their water poisoned, you know, 1% of that would be 3,000 people. Just 1%. Why, and I'm asking, you know, holistically, why was there not 1% of the poisoned people circling the Capitol?
Let me give you some numbers. We had thousands of people come out for Duck Dynasty autographs, and we had hundreds of people come out for our rallies. What does that tell you, Bob?
It tells me that this state is we're either in denial or just a more generalized dysfunction.
I would like to call it Stockholm Syndrome, and I would like to speak to the fact that we're dealing with the same extraction industries who 100 years ago had these folks' grandparents living in labor camps and paying them scrip, and now they're playing the dignity of these people's grandparents' labor against them in the election cycle by closing down mines to influence the vote. So you end up with a 25% turnout.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not lost on me at all. But the question then is, if that was the reality, that we couldn't even get 1,000 people who had been, or 3,000 people who had been poisoned to stand up for themselves, what does it take, Chris, to get them to?
I'll tell you what we've been successful in doing, Bob, is telling the story through social media. We reach out to people. We reached 1 million people within the first 4 weeks on Friends of Water. We went viral pretty quickly. I started the page and asking, how many likes can I get for clean water? And it really resonated with people. And I've had this project in my mind's eye for many years, Bob. I've been driving back and forth. My mother lives in Kentucky. My father lives here in West Virginia. And I've been driving back and forth for 20 years through these mountains, looking at the propaganda that's plastered all over the billboards between Louisville and Charleston on I-64. And we get to hear all these funny stories about blame Obama, blame the EPA. Let's blame the industry. Let's talk about coal stocks. The stock ticker tells the tale, Bob. Numbers are down. They're not looking good. These coal companies are not in good shape. And you know what they're doing? They're pulling up their stakes and they're moving to greener pastures like Wyoming where they can dig a pit. I'll tell you what, West Virginia is top-heavy in labor in the coal industry. We are the most top-heavy in labor, and we are the least productive because our coal, we've already got good stuff. We're down to the scraps, and it's harder to get to, harder to mine. And the only thing we've got left are the mountaintop removal projects. And you know what? We can't give up any more of our mountains, Bob. Those are the only natural water filters that we have.
Yes, they are. 500 of them are gone. More than 2,000 miles of streams are buried. And then there are those 4,000 excess deaths every year. Yeah.
So we're banging the drum. We're stirring the pot. We're keeping sustained outrage on the top of the heap here, and pushing people to the edge of where they're comfortable to explore the idea of, are we safe? Will our children have clean water to drink? Will they wear gas masks? Will they have cancer? I've had two members of my family go through chemo in the last few years and radiation. I'll tell you, this is not genetic, Bob. We have a Appalachian community health care emergency happening. These mountaintop removal sites release all kinds of toxins, heavy metals, contaminants, like you were speaking to, the valley fills with respect to blocking up our natural streams, killing our fish, destroying whatever land we would have to leave for our future generations. What do we do next? Well, we fight for what we have left. We clean up our own backyard. We think local. We act global. And we work together. That's one thing the Friends of Water has done, is we built a platform. We built a ship to sail into the next battle. We built a platform to have the clean water conversation and to address the human rights issue, in that we all have a basic human right to have access to clean, safe water supply. And the UN stands with us, Bob.
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. My colleague Bo Webb and Judy Bonds, who has long since gone, on and is sorely missed, people like Larry Gibson, were at the UN, God Almighty, 8 years ago. 8 years ago. You know, this struggle has been going on for a very, very long time. And it is, for a while there, it was climbing in people's consciousness. And then we sort of, I don't know, I think we got overshadowed.
Well, you know who's sticking up and fighting for the people, Bob? We've got Bill DiPaolo and Paul Corbett Brown, who just got back from Europe, talking to, United Bank of Scotland, different people about the horrors of mountaintop removal. They don't do this crap in the Catskills. Like Bobby Kennedy Jr. says, in New York State, they protect the property values and their human capital because they know that they have nothing to lose. They really have to protect their land, and they do. And why are we going to continue to put up with being the armpit of the East Coast when we have the best land, the best streams? We are the birthplace of rivers here in West Virginia, and also the water uniquely belongs to us in this state.
It does. The fact of the matter is, this is a temperate rainforest, and
correct.
And we are one of the most well-watered states in the Union. And those little streams that they bury in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zones are the feeders for the water supply downstream throughout much of the southeastern United States and up into PA. You know, the Monongahela River rises in West Virginia and flows north. West Virginia University grads have a theory about why the Mon flows north. We'll leave that aside for a moment. But the fact of the matter is, the New River rises in North Carolina and flows through West Virginia. Not far from here, it joins the Gauley and forms the Great Canal that feeds the Ohio. And you know, you just can't bury the streams that feed those streams and expect to have a good result. So the question becomes one of, all right, we recognize the problem. How do we solve it?
Well, we start by...
I personally think that passing the AIC Act would be a huge step forward.
Excellent. And that's the thing. The federal court stood with you this week, Bob, and their ruling, it demonstrates the need for national mountaintop removal legislation. And that was, you know, that was one of the victories this week that we want to lift up and celebrate that you spoke to earlier in the conversation.
Yeah, unfortunately.
These are the moments when we lift up our accomplishments, we tell the story and we celebrate these victories because people join us when we win, okay? That's when these kids and these universities buy in and they convince Stanford to divest $18 billion. And Joe Solomon in Fayetteville, West Virginia, is arguably one of the people behind that movement. He was the social media guru at 350.org behind record-breaking Days of Action in their genesis. And now he works with a coalition of campus groups that is pushing the People's Climate March in New York City. And I'll tell you what, Bob, the Mountain Party has a bus going up there. And if anybody wants a ticket to get on the bus and go join the People's Climate March in New York City, we've got a ticket for you. Just come over to Friends of Water on Facebook or Twitter, and you will find the link to get a ticket and ride up north with us to march on New York City.
Yeah, and
people from all over the country.
What is the date on that, Chris?
I think we're looking at September 21st.
Okay.
Let me double-check that. I think that's the date.
Yeah, that is gonna be a really, really big deal. People are coming from all over the country, converging on New York for that moment. And in fact, some of us in the 8 campaign have been having conversations about that. Well, I tell you what, Chris, among other things, we would welcome you inside the 8 campaign itself. If we want to pass this legislation, we're going to have to put massive amounts of pressure on the Congress in order to pass it. You know,
well, I'll tell you, we reached over 100,000 people the week of those EPA hearings. I think we can help you raise some awareness to the issue. And you know what? I've been working quietly with Vernon for a long time in advertising and trying to plant the seed and win some hearts and minds in this battle. We've got to wake people up to the facts, Bob, and these are the facts. We're looking at the American West is facing record drought, while Nestle is draining a large percentage of the Colorado River's groundwater. That's the thing, ratepayers versus shareholders. Once again, are we going to start tanking our oxygen and selling it to our kids? Is that what it's come down to?
Well, if they can figure out a way to do that, yes. I mean, that's capitalism.
Profiteers.
That's capitalism, okay?
Robber barons.
Pure and simple capitalism. Everything has a price. Under the capitalist system, even human beings have a price.
That's where we need, the market does not regulate itself, Bob. We have to step in and regulate that market. And that's the problem. A lot of that legislation has been undone over the years, and that's why we had the housing bubble. That's why we're bailing out banks. That's why we're still addicted to fossil fuels, because that tap is still running, Bob. They are making money hand over fist, and they're not going to turn off the tap until they have to. And right now, they're milking the cow.
Absolutely. Now, the question becomes one of at where we stand in West Virginia and Central Appalachia. I don't want people thinking, and they don't, because I don't know if you realize it, but you're talking to probably one of the most savvy audiences in the world where sacrifice in Appalachia is concerned. This is an audience that goes the world over. And
familiar with the heavy lifting.
They know the sacrifices that have been made here, among other things, in part because as a broadcaster, I've spent more time talking about mountaintop removal than any other person on earth who sits behind
my friend Brian Reznor has great respect for your talent and for what you put out there. And he's the one that brought us together just a few days ago. And I really want to give him a shout out.
Oh,
he's a strong DJ in our area. And now he's a producer and a promoter. And what a talented guy.
Oh, B-Rez is a dynamo of accomplishment and energy. And well,
he gets the job done.
Well, he was our voiceover guy for a very, very long time here. Until I got to get him back over here to cut some more tracks, but he's bringing change in the belly of the beast over in Beckley.
He's a progressive, Bob.
Oh yes, he is. Ask him why. You'll like the answer. But what I was moving toward is this idea of recognizing that we are all being plundered. Okay, we are. It is not coincidence, and it's not merely an action of the goddess of irony, Chris, that on the heels of the Freedom disaster, we get a disaster in Ohio with the algae bloom. And, of course, the for-profit media said, oh, look, there was an algae bloom. And the for-profit media then wasn't so good at asking, why is there
an algae bloom? Well, I'll tell you why. It's two simple answers. Factory farming and sewage in our water. We are a great society, and we're using the same technology that the Romans did 2,000 years ago. We still defecate in our drinking water, and we don't have enough to do it. It's less than 1% of our water on Earth. Now, in terms of the ongoing West Virginia water crisis, in terms of fracking and with respect to mountaintop removal, I want to get back to the DEP hearing while I have your ear.
Oh, sure.
We were at this hearing, and it was a joke of a hearing, where the DEP and the KD2 attorneys denied facts concerning water quality in the viewshed of the park. And these are the issues that tourists, residents, hikers, birders, bikers, people of all ages who come to the park addressed through pro bono attorneys like Thomas Rist and Bill DiPaolo, who represented them. And as noted by the Kanawha Forest Coalition, issues raised yesterday included the failure of the DEP to secure joint approval from the State Historic Preservation Office is required by West Virginia Code Chapter 22, Article 3, Section 22D2 prior to issuing the permit. Next, the Department of Natural Resources, which was also required to sign off on the permit due to its proximity to the Kanawha State Forest, received 180 public comments, every single comment opposed to the mine. They chose to ignore them all and grant their approval, which I'll tell you, you know, another big goose egg. You know how many these permits they've turned down? Zero in the history of the department. Every single one opposing the mine, every comment. They chose to ignore them all and grant the approval in spite of this very clear public opposition. DNR Director Frank Jehalio claimed his testimony yesterday that DNR manages Kanawha State Forest in the public interest, yet the DNR acknowledged unavoidable adverse impact and, as stated above, ignored the unanimous public comments opposed to this mine. You can watch recordings of the hearing on YouTube on West Virginia Environment videos, and it's split into four parts, morning, afternoon on August 11th and morning and afternoon on August 20th. Interesting points from the hearing. The DNR got a $700,000 kickback from the project, 10 cents a ton on the coal that was offered to them that would pay for the dredging of a fish pond and any damage done to the state park by the adjacent mountaintop removal project. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin and company, the state government, will receive $2 million from the project, and I bet you they're going to fight hand over fist to hang on to that money. The DEP attorneys and the KD2 attorneys sat next to one another again, and
they always do,
working the hearing in tandem, Bob. The Republican chair of the hearing, again, seemed to side with them on every twist and turn. And then DNR Director Frank Jazaria gave us two staggering numbers, and I'm going to go back to the goose eggs, Bob. He said that the state had never turned down a surface mine proposal, ever, and after speaking to reforestation projects on old mountaintop removal sites, admitted he had never actually visited a mountaintop removal site. This is the head of the DNR. One visit to Cayford Mountains, Bob, would teach him the truth and the myth of mountaintop removal reclamation and probably change his mind concerning his rhetoric moving forward. Again, the big zero mentioned was the number of surface mine permits that have been turned down ever. And the last big zero that was very compelling was the number of people who offered a public comment in favor of the project. None. Complaint of water contamination from the last hearing were ignored. We have evidence of them. Also, proper consideration was not given with respect to the public comments, all of which were against the project. The park is protected by ordinance from surface mining projects, and the most important part of the park is the viewshed. Air and water quality will suffer. As we learned during the West Virginia water crisis, there are no acceptable levels of toxic contaminants or chemicals in the water supply. We can't accept
and there's a lot of, and there are a lot of people on wells in that area.
Correct. And the park, wildlife, the people who live not nearby, and the people who visit the area will also suffer negative health effects from the project. And the watershed will suffer negative consequences of mountaintop removal. Heavy metals, toxins, contaminants will enter the surrounding waterways inevitably because those containment ponds always fail, as they did with Davis Creek in this case, within the first 2 weeks of the project starting. We had documented problems with data creek from the KDT number 2 project. South Wings flew over and shot very clear pictures of the containment that failed, and it was a ditch that was cut wrong, basically. And we're not convinced that this will not happen again, Bob. It's high time we engage in some sustained outrage.
No, it's not even convinced that it won't happen again. What it is, it is a certainty, Chris.
Correct.
A lead pipe cinch certainty that it will happen again. And again, and again, and again. And mountaintop removal is a genie that once let out of the bottle cannot be put back in. And it's just a fact, because once the thing starts, they will not stop it for any reason whatsoever. Like I said, I've been to a lot of those same hearings that you were, similar to the one you were at. And I heard one day a lawyer for the DEP, West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, I mean protection, right? They're protecting us. I remember here, it was before the Surface Mine Board, and a question was asked about, and I don't even remember which, you know, the script on these things is always the same. So one, you could just interchange one hearing for another. It's the same. But at one point, a question was asked, and, you know, a lawyer speaking to a tribunal has a duty of candor and honesty. A lawyer talking to the court is forbidden from lying, all right? So the question was put, what would happen? Well, okay, never mind the question. The lawyer represents to the court the following. If we actually enforced the Clean Water Act in West Virginia, we could never issue another mountaintop removal permit. That's on record. It's out there. The little transcriptionist typed it down or talked into her mask. It's out there on record. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection admits that if it actually applied the standards of the Clean Water Act, it would be impossible to ever grant a permit for mountaintop removal.
Correct. So if that's the case, Bob, why is it the DEP attorney, Jason Wandling, who was very, very smug at the hearing, said, and even alluded to the fact that he wanted to save a few trees at one moment, joking, you know, a little condescending manner about the crowd in the room that filled the room. He said there isn't enough evidence to prove the appellant's claim that harm is being done to the forest, among other things, and there's no legal basis for the board to revoke the permit and stop the mining. But the problem was the permit was never legal to begin with.
Yeah, they do that all the time. The you've seen the West Virginia State Quarter, right? 25-cent piece,
right,
with the New River Gorge on the back.
Sure.
Well, you know, the mountain that's back there in the background of the bridge ain't there no more because they blew it up.
Right.
And they started blasting and they started extracting and they started poisoning before they ever even had a permit to do it.
Sure.
Because,
and then they want to quickly say that there's not enough evidence and that will harm the appeal against the Kanawha Forest mine, you know, and that's unacceptable.
You're right. And it's gonna, I mean, I'm not trying to be negative, Chris. That thing is gonna go forward.
Now, we stopped it once, but I'm with you. It very well could start rolling again soon, and probably will, but we are in for the long haul, and we're choosing our battles wisely. This is one we can win if we really want to get positive and stay focused on it. Bill DiPaolo is doing a fine job, and let me tell you, He and Mr. Rist went toe-to-toe with these guys, with the DEP and the coal companies, enough to where they were obviously shaken and disturbed by the reaction of the people in the room. It was hard for me to keep my mouth shut. I was told to be quiet, that I might be asked to leave the room by the lawyers representing the people that we were there with. And the thing is, it's hard to keep your mouth shut. And Mr. Rist told me it was hard for him to keep his mouth shut, too. And when you see attorneys that work for the state up there blatantly lying and denying facts, scientific facts proven a priori to be true.
Yeah, but they do it. And the reason, the problem that exists here, it goes back, Chris, a ways, and I'm not trying to throw up roadblocks. That's not my intent.
No, let's examine the history, because that's where we're going to find our answers.
Because see,
to the riddle.
In 1976, by 1976, there had been a huge outcry against basically just Katie bar the door, no holds barred strip mining in Appalachia. And it was, and during that time, of course, we had the Buffalo Creek disaster that killed 125 and displaced thousands. So by 1976, there's enough of a national outcry, and it had been led by Ken Heckler, God bless him.
He's a Facebook friend of mine. I love Ken.
Oh, Ken Heckler is, well, there should be statues to him. There won't
be. He's up there with Wendell Berry, in my opinion.
Yeah. But by
and Larry 19, and all of our heroes.
By 1976, it came to a head, and the Congress considered legislation to regulate strip mining. And that is what we got in 1977 in the form of the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. Instead of providing relief to people who were beset by strip mining, it codified it into law. And in the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act is the very place where you see mountaintop removal made expressly legal within that statute. Jimmy Carter signed it into law, but he did so saying this is a bad law and it will mean bad things for a lot of people in Appalachia.
Correct.
And so there is nothing, and that brings us back to Judge Copenhaver and Judge Chambers as well, because he's ruled the same way. There is nothing in any of these statutes that say that human life matters a damn. Not a bit. It is not even to be considered. And
but
that's the way the coal industry wants it.
I'm with you. I just was going to say, how are people putting bans into place in their own communities by expressing these concerns all over the country? It's happening. People are standing up and speaking out, and they are speaking truth to power and getting together, getting on the same page.
Well, it is happening in places like New York and Colorado and other areas as well, but it's not happening here because it cannot happen here. There was a case, a couple of years ago where the city of Morgantown tried to ban fracking within city limits. It was struck down in a heartbeat. This is a colony. People who live in West Virginia who consider themselves American citizens, Chris, are not fully vested American citizens. We do not have the same degree of citizenship that a coal company has. And we need to understand that, because anything else is proceeding from fancy and fantasy. We don't. That's why, Judge Copenhaver, bless his heart, the ruling was brutal. I posted a poem about it on my Facebook page yesterday. The ruling was brutal. It says that the Army Corps of Engineers does not have to consider human health or human suffering. It just doesn't, because of the way the law is written. And that means that, and what he was telescoping there, telegraphing, whatever, was if you want a law that addresses human health impacts, you have to pass a law that addresses human health impacts.
Correct.
And that's the job before us.
Let me talk to you real quick about what I was doing in Florida when the water crisis happened. I was working with good guy lobbyists there on clean water legislation, and we put forward a petition and passed a constitutional amendment. Now the good people of Florida can vote in November and choose in the ballot box if they're going to put 3% of the state budget toward clean water for the next 20 years if they vote yes on one. And they also got we got 600,000 signatures for clean water and paid the petitioners $1 apiece and managed the teams and were successful in doing so. And then we got 900,000 signatures for economic engines for the state in terms of MMJ. So now Florida voters can vote yes on two and pass that constitutional amendment as well. That's a win-win for Florida voters. Now, why are we going to take the back seat, Bob, when all around us you've got Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana, all moving forward with industrial hemp projects? West Virginia has the means and the ability to move forward with economic engines like that that will fire up our next wave of economic development. That's the thing. We can make graphene. We can make fiber. We can refurbish our old coal plants and create different components and different fibers there. We can manufacture here with the resources that we have. We can also do large-scale composting projects, create the topsoil that we need for some of these flat mountain tops, and go ahead and put in industrial hemp, put in bamboo, put in mycology projects. They're utilizing in Fukushima to soak up radiation or flat. You can also genetically modify them to soak up fracking fluid or coal ash, whatever you like. And those mushrooms help clean the soil and remediate it for our fish, our wildlife, our plants, our fauna, our flora.
I agree with all of that. Is it possible to succeed at that, Chris, at the same time that this stuff continues?
I don't see where we have an option but to succeed, and that's why we're pushing forward. And the Mountain Party speaks to these issues, Bob, and I hate to get political when we're talking about clean water.
This is a political show. It's okay. Shh,
and that's the thing, is these problems become political matters and have to be settled in that arena, and we're not scared to go there, Bob. We're 10 feet tall and bulletproof right now. We've got the Dream Team. We've got aces in their places. We have attorneys, professors, students, teachers, nurses, doctors. We've got a wide tapestry of different people that are coming together about our water, about our land, about our air. People are standing up. They don't want to be poisoned any longer. No one has the time or the money or the patience or the human capital to spare for that, Bob.
No, they don't. What I was leading up to is something, you know, there is a United States Geological Survey study out there that has thus far been suppressed that speaks to what blasting. You know, we've looked at water for a very long time, and rightly so. What a lot of these scientists are saying, though, is that in addition to water, we need to be paying attention to air, because the ultrafine particulates that are generated by mountaintop removal blasting, as well as by frack blasting, may be a big contingent in the culprits that are causing these diseases because of the way that ultrafines act inside the human body system. And
you are correct. I mean, the numbers show that there's a clear healthcare crisis happening in these communities.
Right.
The numbers are in, and it's frightening.
What happens, though, and the reason I raised this when you started talking about soil regeneration, what we're finding out is that if in soils near mountaintop removal sites, because of the extensive testing that was done by USGS, these soils are absolutely laden with toxins. With polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, with heavy metals like molybdenum, with toxic
bad stuff, Bob. Selenium.
With silica. You know, very few.
So what do we do with legislators who are voting the day of the water crisis? Nick Rayall and Shelley Moore Capito both voted to roll back selenium levels in our water. Now that's intentional poison, Bob. I call high crime. That's treason.
No, I agree.
That is a violent crime against the good people of West Virginia, and that's your legislation, and that's your legislators at work.
Oh, remember, Shelley Moore Capito laughed about the Freedom Disaster.
Correct.
She laughed about the Freedom Disaster and said, "Well, I think we've been into it a little deeper than others. I mean, it wasn't funny at the time, but it's kind of funny now." This woman wants to be a senator.
And meanwhile, your governor's telling you, "I can't tell you if the water's safe or not." You know, where is the leadership, Bob? Where are Democratic leaders? The problem is, in West Virginia, the Democrat leaders are not real Democrats. What's the problem?
Yeah, Chris, I've said for a very long time that we do not have Democrats and Republicans in West Virginia.
We have one party.
No.
Unified front, and they're cashing the same damn checks.
No, we have Colocrats and Colicans.
Republicrats.
No, Colocrats and Colicans, because coal has transcended industry. Coal in this state has transcended business. Coal has become, in this state, a religious orthodoxy. And you know,
where the football field rubs it on the way out the door. Yeah.
I'm a proud son of Harvard on the Mon. They gave me two sheepskins, and to see that happen makes me vomit. That they're rubbing that bloody lump of coal from the Upper Big Branch disaster, where you know, corporate profits brought caused 29 human beings to be incinerated.
And Don Blankenship says, basically, you're welcome, West Virginia.
Yeah, and Don Blankenship laughs all the way to the bank.
Correct. Jim Justice, Mr. Good Steward of the state. Please, man. The Greenbrier, unfortunately, has morphed into a symbol of that represents everything that's wrong with this state, Bob.
Yeah, well, see, I was here. It all worked out kind of curiously. I had been on the road. We had been in D.C. introducing for the first time the AIC Act in the Congress. And I got back here, my family and I, because, well, my family's pretty deeply into this whole thing. I've got two daughters who had their gallbladders out before they were 16 years old. Okay, my son was born with a respiratory birth defect. My eldest daughter,
Appalachian Community Healthcare Emergency.
My eldest daughter is battling thyroid disease. My wife,
I'm sorry.
My wife has kidney disease. Okay, these are our realities. So we,
the cross that we bear every day.
Yeah, we had been in Washington D.C. for the historic introduction of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Bill, the AIC Act. And we returned on June the 29th, and we had been home for about 2 hours, and I remember it was blazing hot outside. And I was on the air. In fact, if you go to the archives of this program, you can hear the derecho hit.
Wow. How's that for symbolism?
I'd been on the road for 12 hours that day, and I'd been away from the microphone for a week or more, and I was absolutely itching to get back.
Hey, Nick Casey, climate change is real.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was anxious to start telling people about all the things that I had seen and what we'd done and who we'd talked to. And in that evening, I got about 30 minutes into the program, and Ferg, my son, comes running back here and says, Dad, something bad's coming. And by about halfway into the first hour of the program, everything went down, and we didn't have electricity for another 12 days. And I'll not forget that anytime soon, because, and I mentioned this because you mentioned Jim Justice, at the same time, his great big, oh, my God, privilege party down at the Greenbrier was going on, golf tournament. Bon Jovi was going to come and sing Living on a Prayer, which we were doing at the time. And every cube of ice in the state was in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, supporting Jim Justice. 80-year-old women were sweltering in 100-degree heat, wanting for electricity, because every bit of the state's emergency response infrastructure was in Greenbrier County making sure that Jim Justice's golf tournament came off without a hitch. National Guardsmen were sent on to the golf course down there to pick up tree limbs and branches to make sure that the professional golfers weren't inconvenienced.
So let's speak to the Capitol again. Who's getting taken care of here? You know, that's the thing. The tail is wagging the dog. Once again, yes, you've got the industry. The ratepayers are going against the shareholders here. Once again, the shareholders are staying at the Greenbrier. These are the people that own the stocks. These are the people that are, you know, celebrating their victories. And that's the thing. Are they looking out for us, Bob? I think not.
They're not, Chris. And then there's another couple of questions. We have focused, and I know you've done a magnificent job of it, on, you know, the poisoning of 300,000 human beings on January the 9th, 2014. You know, 4 days before that, I had asked in on the op-ed pages of the Charleston Gazette, I had asked Natalie Tennant whether she was going to join what I called the coalition of the craven. And, of course, she won't answer. Except to say that she has a balanced approach to mountaintop removal, which is
because she doesn't want to shake things up, and that's our problem. See, I'm dealing with even friends of mine in Charleston who are very Charlestonian. That's another problem specific to West Virginia. We have a hard time seeing past our backyard. We've got the NIMBY folks, not in my backyard folks, but don't really care about the next watershed, and they don't realize our water connects us all. That's the thing. You got to think in terms of the region. You got to think about the tri-state, Ohio, Kentucky. You know where the water was shut off during the West Virginia water crisis? In Cincinnati, a couple hours down the road.
Yep.
In Louisville, Kentucky, where my mother lives, the water mains were shut off because they had high concentrations of MCHM in the water supply. In Louisville, Kentucky, I'm talking 5 hours down 64, Bob. So this is not just a West Virginia problem. This is an American problem. This is a healthcare emergency that really permeates the boundaries of Appalachia. So what we've got to do is stand together as a region. As a region, we've got to speak truth to power. You know who's knocking it out of the park? Keepers of the Mountain Foundation, Appalachian Voices, Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, Bull River Mountain Watch. But we've got a lot of groups that are doing a lot of strong work and stepping up to the plate. And we have tremendous victories to celebrate. And that's how we're gaining numbers. And that's how the movement is spreading and how we're gaining momentum. People join in as we tell the story and we tell the cautionary tale. We caution people and bring them to the edge of being uncomfortable again, but we also tell the story about our triumphs. We celebrate our victories, and there are some. You know, we shut down that strip mine project about a month ago. That's a huge victory, Bob. You know, that's something to celebrate. So that shines a little light at the tunnel for me.
Yeah, every victory has to be celebrated at whatever level we can have them. And I don't know, maybe one of these days we'll celebrate a victory in which the political class of this state becomes respondent to the people who they ostensibly serve. I want to turn back, because I've got another question, if I may.
Please.
Within the purview of the the development of the water disaster, the Freedom disaster, because again, the coal industry's freedom caused a disaster for a lot of decent human beings. There were, you know, we now know, and I know you probably know better than I do, there's no way of knowing exactly how long the MCHM was leaking into the Elk River, which means there's no way of really knowing how long the MCHM was inside the public water supply in West Virginia. That's one.
It was leaking in June during the cleanup, Bob. That's the thing. When did this leak ever stop? It didn't. You know what happened? The water company dropped the ball. They poisoned everyone. Then the state did. Then it was boil here, flush here, boil here. And you know what they're trying to do? They were trying to hold up the age-old mantra in the water plant business, which Bob Bocock, Aaron Brockovich's lead water investigator, spoke to quite often. The problem is that dilution used to be the solution, Bob. That's how they handled this crap. They would just dilute the water and hope that they would get it down to an acceptable parts per million or parts per billion number to where they could flush the system and just let it go downstream. But that's the thing. Where are we passing the buck? Are we passing the buck to Cincinnati, to Louisville, to my mother's house?
Is that where
we're going to send it? Are we going to send this fracking fluid to an Ohio landfill? Is that the answer?
I don't think it is. I don't think the transference of disaster is an answer to disaster. But let me take us a little further into the process. We don't know how long it was leaking.
Right. And actually, we've got clear signs that it was leaking long before Gary Southern and these Nimrods actually bought the company. We think that they might have been the fall guys for this whole project. This was a hot potato that was getting lobbed quickly. If you notice, that sail got pushed through. And then the madness ensued. And it really, you know, it got more interesting. Every day we found out another twist and turn and another dark, evil secret about the plot.
And there's one little dark, evil secret that has not been much talked about. And I'd kind of like, before we wrap up, and you've been very generous with your time, we've been talking for almost an hour now, and I really, really appreciate it, Chris. One dark little secret that has not been touched upon by very many, and that is water systems have to report the amount of lost water in their systems on an annual basis. There are standards out there that are promulgated that are deemed to be acceptable loss levels. an acceptable loss level in the state of West Virginia for West Virginia American Water Company, a privately held corporation that is being run only for profit and not for the public weal. The acceptable water loss standard was 15%. Okay, that means of every 100 gallons that they push out into the 9-county system, they have no idea where 15 gallons of it goes because it doesn't pass through a meter on the other end somewhere. All right? That was deemed the acceptable standard.
Room for error.
In the year preceding, which was the last time the data was available, or the last year for which data was available, in the year preceding the Freedom disaster, West Virginia Americans' water loss was in excess of 30%. Okay? Just wait for a second. Let it sink in. That means that when the MCHM entered the system, in however many gallons it was, for however long it was, you know, people who lived near the plant were complaining of the stench as far back on Facebook as Christmas Day 2013. For however long that water was that poisoned water was passing through the West Virginia American Water Company system, 30% of it likely was going God only knows where. And it will never be diluted. And dilution won't be the solution. And nobody knows where it is. It was passing through metal pipes, through plastic pipes, through leaking out of bad joints. The whole system is an antiquated relic, especially the nearer you get to the actual plant. It's leaked under roads. It's leaked under houses. It's leaked in fields. It's leaked to the, so 30%. And when we sit and when you just really, really let that sink the hell in, 30% of the poison that came out of that water plant, we don't know where it is and never will, Chris.
That's right. Downstream's a broad term, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. You're getting to the heart of the issue. We've got an antiquated water plant system in every town in West Virginia. And you know what? That's going to take big infrastructure money. That's why I'm throwing numbers out there, like 3% of the state budget to take care of this thing, like the good people of Florida are being proactive in dealing with. You know what I mean? We can learn some lessons from our neighbors and our other states depend on water resources in similar ways that we do. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it absolutely does. So
we've got to learn to pick up on these lessons. When we see people doing things right, we need to pick up those good habits. And
Chris, do you have any kind of an answer for why it is that state government, upon being informed that there was a toxic chemical spill, waited for all the hours that it waited before it even issued a warning? Secondly, do you have any kind of an answer for why the system was never shut down?
Sure. I'll go there. The thing is that they wanted this to go away, Bob. This is a huge problem, and they just wanted it to wash downstream because that's the solution. That's how they deal with it. So they didn't understand the implications because we didn't have proper chemical safety data studies done. They didn't understand that they needed to make a plea to the federal government on behalf of the safety of the people. They didn't reach out and ask for the FEMA help. They also didn't reach into the rainy day fund, Bob. That's our big problem. That's why the president didn't kick down, because he's saying, whoa, West Virginia, you've got a lot of money in the coffers there. Bob Kiff keeps those bank accounts pretty tuned up. I'll tell you, he's a very adept controller in terms of running the state efficiently. They've got a big rainy day fund, and you know what? They didn't let loose of any money to look out for the good people of West Virginia or for their health concerns, and they pretty much put the good citizens in harm's way. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. So then this question, and it's a question that I've asked time and time and time again, and it's kind of rhetorical, but really it's not. I think this speaks to our future. If someone had gone to Earl Ray Tomlin at 8 o'clock on the morning of January 9th and said, we've just had a note, Al-Qaeda has dumped 10,000 gallons of deadly poison into the Elk River, would they have shut the system down then?
Right, and would we have allowed them to file bankruptcy and get out of it and fly down to Marco Island, Florida, to hang out where John Boehner and all those guys live? That's the thing. We've been tracking Gary Southern. He's been flying back and forth. We've got researchers down in the Gulf that are working on the oil spill there, scientists. They're also tracking Gary Southern's whereabouts. He's going back and forth from Ann Arbor, Michigan once a week, flying around in his private jet. Evidently, you don't give up the keys to the private jet. And that's another thing. This federal bank, this bankruptcy case is a real albatross. This is a big issue. It's a corruption case, and the federal government needs to step in and investigate and hold these polluters accountable. That's the deal, Bob. We are talking about high crime here. We're talking about treason. We're talking about killing people. We're talking about violent crime. And that's the thing. You know, you've got this stop, don't shoot thing happening in St. Louis. And meanwhile, everybody's having drinks at the Greenbrier and smoking joints out on the golf course and going around arresting the young people in the community to feed the for-profit prison systems. And nobody's talking about the prisoners over at the Southern Regional Jail that are often still getting poisoned.
Yep. It does seem so it becomes rather a holistic mess after a while when you start connecting the dots, doesn't it?
It's a systemic problem. It's a failure in leadership. It's a big corruption case. It's been going on for 100 years. And I've heard these coal guys in the bars here in Beckley talking about, oh, I wish we were back in the Arctic 4 days and you'd just bring a suitcase full of cash and get any kind of permit you wanted. And that's the way business has been done here. Cash in the barrelhead. And then they kick down 10 cents a ton to the state, and there's a little $700,000 for you, and let's push this permit through. And that's the way it gets done. It's all greenback dollars and greed. And that's the thing. At what expense? At the expense of future generations? At the expense of our grandchildren? I won't stand for that. I think that contaminating our water supply would be off the table.
You know, you would think you wouldn't even have to say that, Chris. But,
right, isn't this?
But this is Appalachia, and everything is for sale, even the bodily integrity of our newborns.
Even our grandchildren?
That's
what it's come down to.
Yeah, and we need to understand it that way. It's not just the mountains have been commodified, or the streams, or the air. Our bodies have been commodified. You know, the fact of the matter is, there's not just one kind of injustice on this planet. You know, there's the overt injustice that at least some of us recognize when we see a photograph of a police officer staring through a sniper scope at an unarmed, innocent civilian.
Who is using their First Amendment right to protest.
Precisely.
A act of violence upon a citizen.
On the other hand...
Who's there to serve and protect?
Yeah, it's another kind of injustice, Chris, when a coal company is allowed to hang 2 billion gallons of toxic waste over a community and just hope the community doesn't notice.
But that's the problem. We've been drinking the slurry and the fracking fluid for years, Bob. We've been drinking the Kool-Aid. And people have Stockholm Syndrome. It's set in. They're used to it. They've been in this abusive, submissive relationship with King Coal, kissing the ring for a long time. And you know what? In my mind, those days are over. We're going to speak to the issues. We're going to raise awareness. We're going to lift up our grandchildren and celebrate them and protect our human capital for a change. That's the step that we're taking. The Mountain Party is speaking to those issues, Bob. It's Green Party internationally, and again, we're winning in four countries right now, unlike other parties. And we are speaking to issues like fairness. I mean, we're talking about basic progressive values. Let's talk about labor. Daniel Lutz, who's running in the panhandle, has 6 union endorsements. He's got the auto workers, the coal miners. Why is that, Bob? Why is it that the Mountain Party candidate closest to D.C. has 6 union endorsements? That's because we have leadership in the party. The new chair is Elise Keaton, who's also director of the Keeper of the Mountains Foundation.
Elise is a dear friend, yeah.
Party chair, she's an attorney. She's a sharp young lady with a bright future. She could very well be our next governor. And I'll tell you, that's what we've got to do. We've got to lift these leaders up. We've got the leaders, Bob. We've got people willing to step up to the plate. You've got people like me who will work 12 hours a day for free for what is right and just. Are you with me?
I absolutely am, because I've been walking that road for a while. I know
and
a lot.
I
know a little about that.
You being confident and bold enough to speak truth to power on the radio waves and to inspire people to make change, because that's what this is all about. We can do this, folks. We can change the way things work around here, protect our property value, our human capital, our grandchildren. We can take better care of ourselves, and if protecting ourselves, we protect each other. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Hey, Chris, do you have a, because, you know, there's a whole lot more people listen to this program outside of West Virginia than in it. That's just the way it works out. Is there some way that, you know, if somebody's out far, far away and they, you know, they'd like to be a friend of water and they'd like to put the sticker on their car and they'd like to take that first step, that public statement of support, and then maybe, and you know, because the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, is there some way they can get their hands on one?
Absolutely. All they got to do is send a message to Friends of Water on Facebook or Twitter. I'll tell you what, we have 6 admins who are editors on the page. One's an IT specialist, 2 are attorneys. We've got 3 graphic artists. We've got a heck of a team here. And all you have to do is send us a message, and we'll drop one in the mail. I just got fresh stickers in. Send me $4 or $5 a sticker for donation. You can PayPal me at friendsofwater14@gmail.com. And our P.O. box is Friends of Water, P.O. Box 111111, Minden, West Virginia, 25879, I think, Minden, West Virginia. And PayPal works the quickest. But if you drop me a line, send me a message and say, hey, shoot me a few stickers, I will get back to you within 24 hours and drop them in the mail. And that's how we roll. We're raising money so that we can keep doing what we're doing. And where the money goes is into printing more shirts, more stickers, paying for gas so that we can go between Kanawha County, Raleigh County, Fayette County, and up into the panhandle, the campaign this weekend. And that's what we're doing. We're fighting the good fight and putting gas in the tank so that we will be ready for the next battle. And we are fighting every day. But we are also telling the story and celebrating our victories and building the dream team in the process. Again, a bunch of college kids just got Stanford to divest $18 billion from fossil fuels. Paul Corbett Brown was able to go over to Europe and get some major banks to divest from mountaintop removal. That's the thing. The walls are falling down.
They are beginning to tumble. Let me ask you one. This might be semi-controversial, Chris. And it's not directly related, but it kind of is. You know what the latest internet sensation is? The ice bucket challenge?
I've seen a lot of Friends of Water speak to this issue. I'll tell you, I've seen 60 or 70 of our folks speak to this. And you know what? They're getting a good response and waking people up to the fact that this is a waste of our water. We don't have that much to play with. Look at what's going on in California. You know what's going on out there? Some of the attorneys are sending me messages. Chris, how's it going? They're asking us to come to Colorado and help to work the campaign there against the frackers. That's the thing. People are mobilizing and standing up together, and they're asking us to stand up with them. And I'll tell you what, we're going to stand with each and every one of you, Bob. That's what we do. That's how we roll. We look out for one another, and we are here for you, and we stand with you, and we're speaking to your right to have access to a safe, clean water supply.
Yeah, because I'm watching people just throw perfectly good fresh water around, ice, what have you, and it becomes conflicting, Chris, because on the one hand, ALS is a horrible, horrible disease, and it would be wonderful if we could find some sort of an end to it, along with Parkinson's, along with Alzheimer's, all of these things, but to casually throw around water when California is in drought, when a town has had its water shut down in Ohio, when 300,000 people have been poisoned in West Virginia, there's a disconnect there. And it seems rather callous, Chris.
It really does. That's the thing. You know what it is part of it is the political movement, the Tea Party, people being self-centered, egocentric, and only concerned about them and theirs. And that's the problem. This is a great nation, Bob. What happened to bring us, you're tired, you're needy, you're hungry, you're poor? That's the nation I grew up in. That's what I want to lift up and celebrate. We want to take care of people. We don't want to send babies back to Honduras, left a war-torn area filled with drug cartels and violence that came here to see their parents or to get a better chance. That's the thing. All of us here have people down the line who are immigrants. All of us come from hardy immigrant stock, correct?
Except the folks who were here all along.
Correct. I'm with you. And some of them were.
Yeah.
And there are a few of them left.
And they are, my friends, my indigenous First Peoples friends in northern Wisconsin are leading one of the most profound fights for clean water that this country is seeing, and it is a brilliant thing to behold. I'll tell you a little more about them sometime if you want to know. Chris Hale, this has been a magnificent conversation, and I really do appreciate the time you've taken to share your thoughts and to share your zeal and your enthusiasm and your determination. It is absolutely, because it's catching. It is.
That's how we roll, love and determination. We do it with those two things, Bob. And you know what? It's contagious. There are scientific studies that prove it. If you, it was on Brain Games with Jason Silva the other night. They did a study with a psychologist, and they walk into a room where there's two-way glass, and one of the test subjects bumps the other in the hallway and says something kind of rude on the way in. And then the other one is given the option of mild, medium, or hot sauce to give that person. And that's funny. What the study showed is when they walked in the room and the scientist was off-putting, they were more apt to put hot sauce in the food. When they were bumped by the other test subject in the hall and then they came into the room and the scientist was kind to them, they opted for the mild sauce for the person that bumped them in the hallway. What does that tell you? It tells you that good vibes are contagious, and that when we show compassion and love for others, that what goes down comes around, and that's how it works.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Chris, first of all, I need to let you know that the archive of this program will go up shortly after the program closes at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And if you want to share it around, you are more than welcome to do so.
I would love to.
Secondly, if you're going to be around on Facebook after 9 p.m., I'm going to reach back out and maybe we'll talk a little further. I think there's work to do.
I stand with you, Bob. I stand with Vernon. I stand with the good people who are putting the ACHE Act into action and keeping it in play. We're here to make change. We're here to protect our water supply for future generations. It's simple. And we're going to succeed, and we are. We're celebrating victories every day. As tough as this fight is, we are winning.
We are. We are indeed. Chris Hale, Friends of Water, thank you again for all of your time this evening. We will, I have no doubt, be talking more in the future. And this is always an open and ready forum. Tell the Friends of Water that this conversation has been going on for 10 years here. And
absolutely. We appreciate you people who have been working in the trenches for a long time. That's the thing. I just got into the movement here in West Virginia because in January, I had been discouraged previously by some of the lack of results. You know, I had worked on a wind farm project in Greenbrier County several years ago that was shot down by environmentalists for the sake of indigenous birds and bats and migratory flight patterns. And the thing is, how many animals die from carbon pollution, from water and...
Oh, no. See, I remember that. The NIMBY nightmare of Greenbrier County. The people with the chest hairs and the gold chain who said, oh, Muffy, it's going to destroy, they talk with their teeth clenched. It's going to destroy our view shed. The viewscape pollution is going to be unbearable here. I mean, we've come down here from the brutal city, and we want some country life, and now they're going to make us look at a windmill. I can't stand it.
Oh, the horror. Yes, and that's the thing. We ran through the numbers. That's funny. This conversation was happening on Friends of Water this morning and also on the Mountain Party page. And that's the funny thing. We're weighing the results, and you put aside with the turbines. And I'll tell you, I was at one Spark Festival down in Florida, the Idea Festival, and I saw piezoelectric technology, flutter technology that'll charge cell phones, you know, that that requires no turbines. I saw technology for harvesting natural gas that doesn't require drilling. The technology is here. We have the answers. Like Benjamin Franklin said, I hope we don't run out of coal before we turn to the sun.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Chris, like I said, I hope we'll be talking soon. Like tell folks, this is, you know, you'll note something. We've been talking for almost an hour and a half now. Unlike most radio programs, at no point in time have I said to you, now, Chris, hey, it's great talking to you. Let's take a break now and pay the bills, run some ads, and run a few, you know, tell people about the bowling ball, the vacuum cleaner that will pick up bowling balls and drop it on a mattress made of foam developed by NASA while you're rubbing a tonic into your hair to herbally grow your hair back. We don't do that here, Chris. We don't do that here. This is about the conversation. This is the future, and anybody, Chris, of goodwill is welcome to engage in the conversation here.
And I'd like to have our platform chairs call in. We've got an economic platform in the Mountain Party. We also have a fairness platform. We've got a legalization platform. We've got a labor platform. We are the party of the people. We're speaking to the real progressive issues that the Democrats are just leaving behind.
Yep. We know what's happened to the Democratic Party. It is a sad thing. It has been co-opted. It has been taken into the giant corporate Borg. And, you know, but you know what? They are not irresistible, and not all of us will be assimilated, Chris. Not all of us. No. Some of us will stay out here and try to hold it at bay and eventually stop it.
That's the thing. How long are we going to put up with the choice of the lesser of two evils? That's the thing. Divide and conquer is an ancient battle tactic, and we're still falling for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are systemic things that are unique to the American system that were probably a mistake from the beginning, but you have to have a really, really comprehensive understanding for why the Constitution was created the way the Constitution was. Charles Beard's analysis, the economic interpretation of the Constitution from like 1917, is really the best beginning point for getting that comprehension. But I fear that's probably a conversation for another day. In the meantime, let's do talk, maybe chat even after the program, and I'll shoot you a note and let you know when you can go and get the audio file.
Excellent. I appreciate your time, Bob, and it's been a pleasure.
It's been an absolute joy on this end, and we're going to get together. We'll sit down across a glass of hard cider or a Fayette County crafted beer or something, and who knows what might come out of that.
I'm looking quite forward to it, and that's the thing. There's work to be done, and I'm ready to roll up my sleeves and get the job done and speak some more truth to power.
Indeed, indeed. Chris Hale, thank you very much. Take care. If you see B-Rez before I do, tell him I said hi, and thanks for hooking the two of us up for this conversation.
Absolutely. He's over promoting a party at Munchies tonight. Buy one, get one list for the ladies over there. And B-Rez is hard at work, 7-8 days a week. Bare minimum.
Eight at the very least. Chris Hale, Friends of Water, take care. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Bob. It's been an extreme pleasure, and I appreciate your time, sir.
All right. Bye now. You know, it's easy to get to on Facebook. Just look them up, Friends of Water. And I think they're findable on Twitter. If you just look, you'll find Friends of Water. That is Chris Hale, who gave it its impetus in the wake of the poisoning of 300,000 human beings in 9 counties in West Virginia. Why? Because money. Everything here has been commodified. It's not a joke. And it's not an exaggeration. This entire state is being liquidated. And this region is being liquidated. But you know what? And here's the tough part. If they are ultimately successful, it doesn't mean that, oh, well, okay, we liquidated Appalachia. Okay, we'll stop now. You're next. We're all next. Everybody's downwind. Everybody's downstream. I mentioned this idea talking to Chris. Chris Hale, Kelly, H-A-L-E, Chris Hale, Friends of Water, in the chat room. Kelly wanted to know what's Chris's last name. Chris Hale. This idea of different forms of injustice. You know, last night we had a long conversation with Texas Betsy about the state of public education in this country. She was telling stories from Texas, but we were getting emails from Vermont and emails from California and other places saying, yeah, same thing here. So it's not that one state's getting it wrong and a bunch of others, or a few states are getting it wrong, but a bunch of others are getting it right. We're not. And if you want to understand, say, a Ferguson, Missouri, you need to understand issues like education. If you want to understand Ferguson, you have to understand poverty. If you want to understand Ferguson, you have to understand hopelessness. And all these things tie together. I'll say this. When I saw that iconic photograph of the cop with the sniper rifle looking downrange, you know, 100, 150 yards, putting crosshairs on citizens exercising their First Amendment rights who are unarmed and no threat whatsoever, I understood viscerally how that feels. I'm not trying to compete with anybody. I'm not trying to steal anybody's limelight. I'm not trying. No. But I understand how that feels. And I imagine there are many others who do as well. That's the thing. Ferguson, Missouri is not an isolated event. I saw somebody in the chat room post a good long while back. This country is a powder keg. And it is. And it's floating in a sea of gasoline. And we have so-called leaders who are sitting in a rowboat striking matches. And it's poverty, and it's hopelessness, and it's education or the lack thereof. It's the overt and deliberate destruction of what we used to call the middle class in this country. It is the sacrifice of the commons for the Koch brothers et alia, for the Jim Justices, so they can have the National Guard picking up brush from a storm that hasn't happened in this area in hundreds of years, if ever. It's Don Blankenship incinerating 29 human beings past recognition and getting away with it. It's the Wall Street bankers who liquidated the United States and laughed all the way to the bank and never did a day's jail time. It's cynical pricks like Freedom Industries who quietly go and file bankruptcy and walk away from poisoning 300,000 people. And it's all injustice. I said I can identify it just roiled my gut when I saw that photograph from Ferguson of the sniper. Why? Because a bunch of us were down at Marsh Fork Elementary School one day in the shadow of more than 2 billion gallons of toxic waste. And we were there to beg. Because we were past asking. We were begging. See, that's what happens in the sacrifice zone. You beg. You have to beg. And most of the time, even the begging doesn't do any good. But we were rallying there on the playground field of Marsh Fork Elementary School, beneath more than 2 billion gallons of toxic waste behind a leaking dam, next to a toxic coal preparation plant that spread poisonous coal filth all over the school every day that the children went to school there. And when the word went out that we were going to rally there, well, the Friends of Co. decided that they were going to come along and see if they couldn't intimidate the tree huggers. Right? And so consequently, the West Virginia State Police showed up. And they put snipers on the roof of Marsh Fork Elementary School. And they were constantly, through their scopes, putting the crosshairs on innocent people all over that crowd. It's unsettling. I've sat in a bank shareholders meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina, when in every row there was a plainclothes cop with a gun under his or her jacket, ready to shoot any tree hugger who might stand up and make a problem. Yeah. Injustice takes many forms. When the sniper is pointing a rifle at an innocent, the injustice is overt. You can't miss it unless you willfully miss it. Then there's the covert injustice, or perhaps casual injustice, or capitalist injustice. I'm not quite sure what we want to call it yet. But that casual injustice is 2 billion gallons, or 7, or 9. You know, there's 100 billion gallons of toxic waste in this state hanging over people's heads in real communities. And you just kind of have to learn to live with it. And you wonder what it sounds like when one of those damn things breaks. And you wonder where you'll go. And then you realize it's not so much where you'll go, it's where you'll wind up. Because you'll just be taken wherever the wall of toxic waste takes you. You might wind up in a tree impaled 100 yards or 10 miles or 40 miles down the holler, downstream. And see, the thing is, it's easier to comprehend something like that sniper photo than it is to comprehend the toxic waste. But the question is, and it's not a competition, but do we have the intellectual capacity to understand that they are both forms of terrorism, and they are both forms of institutionalized terrorism? You know, we are 8 months out now since 300,000 people got poisoned. And for any one of those 300,000 people, what was offered in the way of counseling, of mitigation, of PTSD. And yeah, people have PTSD out of this. The people who showed up in emergency rooms with their skin on fire. Who breathed it. Who bathed in it. Who ingested it. And who probably at some point in every blessed day wonder, is that ache I feel related to this? I feel like I'm getting the flu. Is that because I was poisoned? Because there are no answers. There is only the fact of having been terrorized, of having been a victim of corporate terrorism. Government-sponsored terrorism. Because when the government refuses to do anything about the people who handle the poison, the government becomes a sponsor of the terror that comes from the poison. But a coal company, for instance, relies on people's quiescence. They rely on people who, simply as a matter of self-defense, in order to keep from being reduced to a blubbering mass of terror, find some way to get through every day underneath those billions of gallons of toxic waste. Who find a way to get through the day, even though they know that every time the foundation of their home rumbles, they're going to start breathing some poison. And that just like the 300,000 poisoned people in the nine-county area, one of these days, one of those things that doesn't feel quite right is going to wind them up in a doctor's office, and the doctor is going to say, I'm sorry. You've got cancer. Or maybe they'll be up on what's left of a mountain, running a weed eater like Larry Gibson was when he just died. Or maybe it'll take from July to January like it did for Judy Bonds when cancer came to her. Or maybe it'll be December to March like it was for Joanne Webb when cancer came to her. Or maybe it's embedded in the pride of a brand new, never been one before grandmother or grandfather who looks and says, why can't baby breathe right? Injustice, injustice, injustice. Injustice. The difference between this overt and covert injustice is the fact that with a bullet, you know what got you. In the sacrifice zone, you may never even suspect. Think of it. Think of it as the difference between being done in by Lizzie Borden versus being done in by Lucretia Borgia. This is Conversation Radio, listener supported. We try to raise $150 every evening, and thanks to Sal and Paul, we've raised 10 of it. Thank you. And hopefully we will get to the remaining 140 before the next hour and 12 minutes brings the program to a close. And like I said, it is Conversation Radio. It relies upon you. The number 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. If you want to participate in the program, if you want to engage in this discussion, this dialogue, this long-standing conversation that's been taking place for nearly 10 years, jump right in. Skype to Skype, it's just Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Welcome to jump in that way, too. It all works. Green News Report coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, August 21, 2014.
5 inches of rain fell in some areas. Almost as much rain in a few hours as parts of the state get in an entire year.
Way too much water now falling on the Arizona desert.
8,000 gallons of fuel, we're told, is involved in this spill.
Another day, another toxic spill.
This is really is going to enable a new era in photovoltaic research.
Recycling old car batteries into solar panels. Wind energy prices hit an all-time low. Plus,
it looks sort of like a cross between a spaceship and an covered wagon and old mill.
An innovative water wheel automagically cleans up Baltimore Harbor.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There's that Gallup poll that came out last month which found 1 in 4 Americans is skeptical of all the effects of climate change.
Who gives a shit? You don't need people's opinions on a fact. You might as well have a poll asking which number is bigger, 15 or 5.
Well, it depends which news channel you're asking. This is your Green News Report.
Or do owls exist? Or are there hats?
Okay, Desi Doyen, we spent some time in Phoenix, Arizona this summer. I thought we were just lucky we got caught in 2 haboobs, dust storms, and 1 huge downpour that I spoke to local residents there who said they had never seen anything like it in all of their years out there. But we weren't just lucky. The extreme weather in the southwestern desert continues.
Yeah, it's actually gotten even worse. Dramatic rescues were caught on camera from flash flooding in Phoenix this week.
Way too much water, a torrent of rain falling too quickly in that desert state. That has triggered flash floods and high water rescues from people trapped in their homes and cars.
5 inches of rain fell in some areas. Almost as much rain in a few hours as parts of the state get in an entire year.
Flash floods knocked out power and actually ripped off parts of homes. It's funny that we had to travel to the desert of Arizona to see rain since we've seen so little of it in California.
We've seen none of it in California.
Heavy deluges are blamed for a rash of deadly landslides around the world this week. 8 inches of rain fell on the city of Hiroshima, Japan. 8 inches in just 3 hours caused a landslide that killed at least 27 people. Record storms also caused deadly flash floods in Sweden, Thailand, Nepal, and India this week. Global warming is linked to the observed increase in heavy deluges.
Just to underscore that, this is not just extreme weather. It seems to be a broken climate. Pay attention.
Another day, another toxic spill.
This is the Duke Energy plant that we're talking about. Just after midnight, they had a fuel spill. 8,000 gallons of fuel, we're told, is involved.
Just 5 months after Duke Energy's massive coal ash spill in the Dan River in North Carolina, Duke Energy is now taking responsibility for another spill, this time on the Ohio River near Cincinnati this week, the source of drinking water for millions. The Coast Guard has shut down 15 miles of the Ohio River to prevent that diesel fuel from entering Cincinnati's water supply. Heavy rains are also blamed for the collapse of another huge mining waste tailings pond, this time just south of the U.S. border in Mexico this week, that spilled 10 million gallons of acids and heavy metals into 2 rivers downstream. Mexican officials say the mine company neglected to report the acid spill until residents called in to report their rivers were turning orange. How about some good news, some breakthroughs and innovation?
How about something, anything?
Well, John Kellett of the Baltimore Maritime Museum was so disgusted by the trash in Baltimore's inner harbor, he invented a solar-powered water wheel to clean it up using the water's own current.
It's being turned by the current of the Jones Falls, which is flowing very rapidly because we just had a pretty large rainstorm, and that wheel is turning this conveyor belt that is picking up all of this trash that has flown down the Jones Falls. We've got a lot of plastic bottles, we've got a lot of styrofoam cups, and I believe the water wheel has just accumulated its first tire.
In the 3 months since it's been in Baltimore Harbor, the water wheel has already picked up 40 tons of trash.
Where would that trash have ended up otherwise?
Out in the harbor.
Out in these garbage gyres that we hear about around the world?
Yes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kellett.
Researchers at MIT have developed a breakthrough method to recycle the toxic lead from old car batteries to make cheap solar panels made with a substance called perovskite.
And this has really been a paradigm shift because these materials, are extremely inexpensive, and they promise to reach the highest efficiencies.
Finally, in Britain, bad weather is a boost for wind energy. Instead of being battered by recent storms, Britain's onshore wind farms instead harvested that energy, generating a record 22% of the UK's electricity, more than double the amount that was provided by coal on the same day. And in the U.S., wind energy prices have hit an all-time low. In some parts of the country, wind energy is now the cheapest source of electricity utilities can buy, cheaper even than subsidized coal.
Well, it must be lemons into lemonade week. Well done, Desi Doyen. For much more on all of those stories, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation while you're there to help us stay on your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
To admit it's getting better, it's a little better all the time. To admit it's getting better, it's getting better since you've been mine.
A minute past the hour, about 59 or 58 and change minutes worth of conversation remaining in the program. And with that in mind, well, before that. One thing. Thanks to Texas T from the chat room for helping out with fundraising this evening. Between Texas T and Sal and Paul, we now have only $130 more to go to reach the evening fundraising goal that makes all of this possible. Jim, with an observation based on my conversation with Chris Hale, Friends of Water. No pun intended, this could be a watershed date for many. Indeed, Jim. Thank you very kindly. Let's go to the phones. Never mind. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know, Jim?
Oh, another great show, man. Very, very impressive. And Chris Hale is... The sad thing is, it's not only interesting, but
Chris
it's
is a man
scary.
On Chris is a man on fire. And justifiably so.
Yeah, but it also made me think about the only thing that kind of gives me a little concern is that, I remember, the end of the Vietnam War, what was it, 72? And then just like that, the quote unquote, the anti-war movement, of course, it disappeared. There was no more war. But then they just got into kind of like disco and superficial things. Because it's kind of like, a magician, sleight of hand, distracting people's attention. And people just go back to thinking, everything's fine. Kind of like Reagan taking down the solar energy things, energy panels off the White House.
Yeah. We have a problem, okay? And the first step in solving a problem is identifying it. And in this case... And you mentioned a couple of them, the Vietnam War, and then, of course, Watergate. In both instances, we celebrated victory and went home, or a lot of people did. I don't think you can collectively say anybody did anything and be certain of it. But, we ran that miserable monster out of the White House. We'll never have to worry about that again. That's 1972. No, I'm sorry, 1974. 1974, and in less than six years, we were saying hello to Uncle Ronnie, and in a couple of more years, we had Iran-Contra. It's that eye on the prize thing, Jim. When you're out working in the grassroots, or when you're working on this side of social change. Nobody gets a break. It's like people like Chris and Vernon Haltom, who's the executive director at Coal River Mountain Watch. I mean, there's a reason that at the end of every program, I thank the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. There's a reason I do that, because it's true. Because they are putting themselves on the line every day against an industry that has billions with which to oppose them. And what's more, the people who are opposing them... They're getting paid every day. And they go home at the end of the day and they put the issue away until they have to get up the next morning and go get paid to poison people some more. But it's not so if you are on the receiving end and if you are on the defending side and you have to defend every day. It takes a hell of a toll, Jim.
Yeah. Well, it's just like with, I'm in Louisiana, and we get our water from the Mississippi. It's, you know, and then, we're at the bottom of the Mississippi, and no telling how many chemicals and stuff, chemical plants and whatnot, dumping water, sewage and all that, and, you know, I was thinking about that. The water, you know, is... I get, you know, it's, I haven't died yet, so I guess it's all right. But, you know,
well,
it was a long term.
But see, there, you mentioned the, your neck of the woods, or in your case, bayou. I feel a tremendous degree of kinship between Appalachia and the Gulf Coastal region. And most people don't, you know, you think bayou and you immediately think Louisiana. But in fact, that bayou culture extends from Texas all the way over to the Florida Panhandle.
Right.
And you know, it's been routine. People have been routinely poisoned for generations there. Like I said, there's a kinship. There is a kinship of oppression and injustice, and a line that runs between Appalachia and the Gulf Coast. You know, I guess the point of demarcation is y'all have a lot better cuisine. But
for the moment, yeah.
Well, you know, as long as the shrimp and the oysters are alive, I don't know. I don't even know if people are. I guess for the ignorant, it's business as usual down in New Orleans, and people are just shucking oysters for all they're worth. But I'd sure think twice.
I'll still eat them. You know, I mean, they're kind of hard to turn down. But I mean, I have second thoughts about it, you know, should I be eating the seafood, you know? I mean, just wondering, you know, from not only being at the bottom of the Mississippi, but the Gulf oil spill, what, 5 years ago? You know, and then you could ask which one. But, you know, the big BP.
Yeah.
You know, the one where...
And, you know, Chris referenced that. You know, he's got friends and colleagues down there who are still monitoring, because that is, and we need to understand it, and it goes back to your original point, Jim, that ain't over either. I remember when, you know, I used to do broadcasts for a wonderful group here in down in the Kanawha Valley called Seneca 2, good progressive group of people. And they had Dar Jamal up one time, and he's a brilliant reporter. And he was telling stories of what he had learned when he had gone down to study, to report in the aftermath of the BP Horizon disaster. And he was talking about a young man, he told us one story of a young man who was perfectly healthy who went out swimming every day of his life in the Gulf and came back one day after swimming, and in a couple of months he was dead.
No.
Because of what he'd been exposed to, the toxic exposures.
Yeah. You won't hear anything about that at all. And then, well, it's just, it does get frustrating, you know? I mean, and then, like, people just seem to forget. I mean, I was going to point out, this region down here, as you know, is very red politically. Never mind the Green Party. That's, you know, I'm strongly behind the Green Party, but the thing that worries me about even the Green Party, if they were to somehow get enough people to get elected and make a big dent into the Congress, you know, the Senate and the House, and would the same thing that happened to the Republicans after they won in 61, and then, you know, Abe Lincoln was killed in 65, whether by, what was it, 68, 72, 1800, 68, 72. You had Grantism, and just the Republican Party just turned out to be the corporate party by the 1880s at least, and that's not a long time.
No, the times when there has been dramatic change governmentally in this country have been very short and very rare. And so when the opportunities arise, we absolutely have to seize them. and we cannot stop to say. I wish it was otherwise, Jim. But when we get little victories or big victories or any victories at all, we don't get to stop and throw a party and celebrate. You got to move on to the next one, because the money, you know, capitalism, is always on the move and always ready to bring the next threat.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just like they did with I have a feeling back when Roosevelt got elected and after the assassination attempt or the failed coup, whatever it was, I remember hearing about or reading about, they just bided their time, and then by 1952 they snuck in with Eisenhower, and he was actually a fairly decent, in fact, the best Republican since I wasn't even alive. But he's halfway decent. But even I've heard some tapes on, I think it was your show or Malloy's show, about where they had Eisenhower talking, and he's basically speaking like a Democrat, proposing Democratic ideals, which if you were, Social Security and other things, but if you would propose that now in the Republican Party, I mean, you couldn't get the Republican nominee for dog catcher.
Well, that's because, you know, parties are always constantly changing. And in the case of, you know, them, not for the better. The only reason that Eisenhower sounds sort of like a Democrat now is because the Democratic Party of FDR has moved toward Eisenhower. Eisenhower is dead. He has not moved toward the Democratic Party. The rightward political shift in this country. That's not to say that the people generally, Jim, are rightward shifting. We're not. If you just quietly ask people, and you know, there are funny instances of it. If you go out on the street, and I think this was, I forget which late night talk show this was that did it, but if you go out and ask people, would you prefer to have the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? Almost without fail, they said, I want the Affordable Care Act. Because it's affordable,
right. Yeah, not realizing that's the same program.
Same thing, right? But in a larger sense, you can say same thing. You know, do you think you should have good roads to drive on? Yes. Do you think you should have clean water? Yes. Do you think you should be able to breathe the air without getting sick? Yes. Do you think we should take care of sick people in this country without ruining them financially? Yes. The great questions that face our nation are almost uniformly all answered the way that you and I and the Horn Family Commune Congregation would answer them. But they are not responded to that way in the halls of power. Now, I think my friends who are involved with campaign finance reform and election reform and all of that would say it's because money. Because of the money that's in the system.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And, you know, the question then becomes one of, all right, how do you oppose that? Well, you get the money out of the system. Maybe when an opposing force is against you, running headlong into it when you already know that it's stronger than you are, ain't going to get you very far, is it?
No.
So then maybe the better tactic is to try to figure out a way to flank. Or sometimes you just strike and withdraw and strike and withdraw and strike and withdraw and try to weaken it as you can where you can. You know,
like
probe,
in the art of war.
Yeah, probe and find the weak point until you can open up enough space to exploit it. And frankly, the issue that Chris Hale is talking about is one of those issues. Because, you know, I just don't think there's a whole lot of an argument for more corporatization of public drinking water supplies being the answer here, is there? Because,
no.
Because you know, government didn't poison 300,000 people's water, Jim. Capitalism did. That wasn't just methyl cyclohexane methanol flowing down the Elk River. That was capitalism flowing down the Elk River. into people, into the water supply, and into people's bodies, and causing ungodly amounts of who knows what kind of damage 10, 15, 20 years from now. That's capitalism causing that, okay?
Oh, I totally agree, but the thing is, you talk with people, and they've been so brainwashed, and you talk to you blue in the face, and, you know, and you don't even have to talk to them directly. You can kind of feel where they're coming from. They just buy that corporate line, and then, you know, it's just bizarre almost. Yeah.
Well, it is.
But I'm not giving up. So.
No, you can't. You don't come from giving up stock now, do you?
No, I don't think so. Not till I draw my last breath.
Exactly.
Hopefully I got 20-some odd.
Yeah, and here's rooting for a whole bunch more of those breaths, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, if you tell me, yeah, this, just because I'm shallow, it's like the beginning of apocalypse now, out on the beach. If I say it's safe to surf, it's safe to surf. Yes, sir. Well, you know, Jim, if you tell me I get down that way, it's okay to eat an oyster. Yeah, I'm going to eat an oyster.
Okay.
Jim, have yourself a good night. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from the Gulf Coast down Louisiana Stanway. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, Jim. Oh, we're having a gym convention tonight.
I guess so. Either Jim 1 or Jim 2. I'm not sure which name has been assigned. I guess I'm Jim 2.
I think you're Jim 2 for the evening, but that you know, that changes from day to day.
Very impressive call with your friend there.
Yeah, Chris is something.
And, you know, I think that when people begin to be thirsty, and they realize that what they are drinking is killing them, I think some of the brainwashing fluid might begin to dry up. And
I badly want that to be the case, but that's, you know, that was the issue that I was raising with Chris in the conversation. What is it, you know, okay, not even 1%. How about 0.5%? That would have been 1,500 people out there standing with pitchforks and torches in front of the West Virginia State Capitol. Didn't get that either.
Well, you never can tell. Wherever there, you know, if there is one righteous man in the city, it might be spared. Going back to a biblical reference. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I do.
And I guess the complexion of your call with this gentleman sort of sparked a little optimism in me that I have, tell you the truth, really lost. And I can understand why Jim 1 says what he says. But when people begin to get thirsty and hungry, that's when you're going to have some problems.
And I mean, we've already been there.
Sure have. You remember that movie, 3 Days of the Condor?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that whole thing, that whole spiral of CIA stuff and what was going on and the message that Cliff Robertson gave Robert Redford at the end?
Help me.
Basically, it's about when what people need, they're going to do anything for you to get it for them. And, of course, this guy in the film named Atwater or whatever had contrived with something in the Middle East, and it's all about oil and stuff like that.
Sure.
I mean, what I'm saying is when, as you said before, when the cable's turned off or when resources begin to diminish and people begin to realize why, that's when you're going to have, in my opinion, some change.
See, as a species, Jim, we've kind of cornered ourselves. We've painted ourselves into a hydrocarbon corner. But if you just try to clear your mind for a minute and you look at the broad sweep of the relatively short amount of time that human beings have existed as a species on this planet, and that is measured in, okay, I think the generally accepted term is about 100,000 years for Homo sapiens.
Basically, nanoseconds compared to what the, you know.
Yeah, to the rest of the planet. But, okay, then what portion of that 100,000 years, what percentage, and I'll leave this to the math geniuses out there because it's past me, what portion of that 100,000 years is represented by the 150 years that we have spent being fossil fuel dependent?
If you put it on a graph, I dare say it would even show.
Yeah, it's not a dot, is it?
No.
And so right now, whether it be the MCHM disaster in West Virginia, or whether it be various and sundry spills, you know, several tens of thousands of gallons of oil are on their way down the Ohio River now, all of these things, you know, the wars we have fought, the blood we have spilled, Jim, all for hydrocarbons. But if you can even step back the tiniest amount, you recognize that we need water a hell of a lot more than we need oil. We need air a lot more than we need oil. Human beings have lived successfully and even brilliantly on this planet without a damn bit of either. You know, either oil or coal or natural gas, none of that.
Yes, they have.
By the way, the calculation has been done. The amount of time that human beings have been on the planet, as represented by, as expressed by the time of, the amount of time in which we've been using hydrocarbons is 0.15%.
Minuscule.
Now, if I'm understanding that as a mathematical expression correctly, that's not even, that is 0.15%.
Effectively, yes, absolutely. But a lot of damage has been done, of course, during that period of time. But eventually, I think people are going to be faced with the fact that they're going to be thirsty. They're going to be hungry, and they're going to be scared to breathe the air outside of any type of contained filtered shelter, if they could even devise something like that, because of the small size of these particular things that you've been talking about for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically what I'm trying to say is I think we're going to get to the point where we're either going to have to clean up our own act or die or vanish from the planet.
And, you know, there's a significant contingent of people who say the sooner we're gone off this planet, the better. I'm a little too anthropophilic to be able to say that.
I understand that. Unfortunately, man has a way of making very stupid decisions, and stupidity has a habit of getting its way. But I don't want to be pessimistic, against the backdrop of your beginning program, and hope that there is a ray of sunshine that will enable people to begin to see exactly why their weather is changing, why their water is polluted, and why their food is not safe to eat, or their air safe to breathe. Because our medical systems in no way are equipped with any form of redundancy to deal with the catastrophe which is coming. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, and see, you mentioned a desire not to be pessimistic, Jim. I don't think this is a pessimism versus optimism dichotomy. We have to be, because what we're suffering from in large part now is a lack of realism.
Exactly. Reality.
We have to be realistic about this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, reality is very hard to face. You know, I'm not trying to get too far from the field here, but last night I watched this film called The Desert Fox about Rommel, when he was trying to explain to Hitler what was happening on the Western Front and what was happening this, that, and the other. Rommel was totally realistic, and Hitler was just making castles of air. And in that movie, played by James Mason, here is one man who is explaining, this is what is going to happen. And then, of course, Rommel faced the idea, why am I serving a man who is so dedicated in his own self-destruction? And I hope that same form of reality will begin to spread. Not a very good analogy.
Well, no. And I don't think people are misunderstanding the thrust of your argument. But why? And this is the question, and the question is answered by education. You know, Chris Hale is running around the country trying to open people's eyes as to why these things happen, how these things happen.
Well,
people have to be open to receiving that information. I mean, we cannot, whether we're talking about mountaintop removal or fracking or tar sands, you know, remember, I've mentioned it before, they want to start going after tar sands in Utah. They want to start going after tar sands in northwest Alabama, for God's sakes.
Now, yeah, they're trying to spread this type of thing.
And this will be the end of us, Jim. You know, for people who want the earth to just sort of shed us like an unwanted virus, drill, baby, drill. It'll take care of itself pretty quick. We can't destroy the earth. We cannot destroy the earth. Even if we burn it to a cinder, it's going to keep tottering along in its little elliptical orbit around the sun.
But, oh, I definitely agree. Absolutely.
But we can make the earth unfit to support us or a lot of other species. But we, unfortunately, we are not immune, I guess is what I'm saying. We're on the menu too.
And you have these survivalists who are placing all these bunkers and stuff like that underground, thinking that this will basically protect them. Well, I'm reminded of Edgar Allan Poe's The Mask of the Red Death. You know, Prince Prospero, in spite of the contagion surrounding the area, thought himself safe in his castle. Guess what? Didn't work. Edgar Allan Poe was trying to tell us a lot of things, I believe, in that particular piece that he wrote.
Oh, I think so.
Maybe I'm just a little too far with my analogies or whatever, but it's the best I can come up with tonight.
No, you're fine, Jim. You're banging on all eight tonight. No, don't worry about it.
Well, I just want to thank you for having that gentleman on your program tonight, and it did provide some ray of hope, and I'm going to get off here and let somebody else contribute to this conversation. So you take care, and thank you again, Bob.
Oh, thank you for sharing, Jim. You have yourself a good evening.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Our buddy Jim calling from not too awfully far from here. The line's open. You know, we have to go one at a time, at a time, at a time. It's just the curse of things as they are right now. 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or on Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you're already on my contacts, you can just punch that right up and we'll be in contact, or you can send me a contact request, and Skype to Skype is, of course, free. Comes in the same way the phone calls do. Thanks going out to Jason. Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much. Jason says, thanks, Bob. Please keep the great work. You're a true patriot. I listen when I can, and I really appreciate the program. Jason from San Jose. Thank you, Jason. You and others are how the program continues. Otherwise, I'm just sitting here talking to a dead microphone. And that's the way it's been for 10 years. we've gone over a few scary patches, and hopefully we won't have too many of those, but they'll arise from time to time. But the best way to keep it from happening is to just keep up, keep us from getting, us not getting in a fundraising hole. And let's see, where does that take us? $110 to go now. $110 to go on this evening's fundraising goal. We got about 30 minutes to do it in. Hopefully we will. Granny T from Tennessee says, memo to Jim. Not all of us gave up. And this is Jim 1, not Jim 2. Not all of us gave up, but we sure were outnumbered and beat down to hell. Best of all, Granny T. And that's, it wears you out. It does. Granny T offered this a little bit ago as well. Where are the baby feti only savers when you really need them? 1992 Republican convention in Houston, we were covered up with Operation Rescue. Yep. The old criminal here helped block their access to the Planned Parenthood locations. Perhaps a new model would be when they show up with their gross pictures, we could show them pictures of live babies and children sick and dying from pollution and proven statistics and so forth. Yeah, I know, Granny T says. Those psycho fundies wouldn't care. As good old Molly Ivins would say, they are crazier than shithouse rats. If you've ever seen a rat that lives in me, you understand. Yes. Granny T says, thanks for all you and the Horn family continue to do. It was a real pleasure to hear from Texas Betsy yesterday. Thank you, Granny T. Thank you. Irish Dave, who's really good at this kind of thing, points out that the paraphrase of what Jim 2 was talking about from 3 Days of the Condor, when people are cold and in the dark, what will you tell them? Not now, then. Remember, with fascism, the trains run on time and time flies. 8 months, huh? Irish Dave says that's a paraphrase, of course, but it's always about oil. And that's the frustrating thing. How did we forget so quickly? Now, this is not to say that, and we need to understand that, and this is why we do this on Thorn in the Side Thursday. When we say get away from hydrocarbons, we're not talking about, as the friends of coal like to say, freezing to death in the dark. God, what a bunch of morons. Morans. Sorry. That's not what we're talking about. The technology exists. Did you hear in the Green News report just a little bit ago about the fact that, this past month, the UK got more energy from wind turbines than from coal? See, the transition is happening. But the problem is, we are not on our own timeline. We are on nature's. And as has been pointed out so effectively and famously by our buddy Grant, nature bats last. Great blog to that effect out there. Look it up. Wind energy is becoming cheaper. It's cheaper than it's ever been. But we can't because there's a gang of terrorists holding the country hostage from Capitol Hill. We can't make the progress that we need to make. We can't pass, for instance, a subsidy bill to make it more likely that people will put up more wind turbines, more solar panels. Because they are doing such a magnificent job of trying to deflect people's attention from the fact that this is an existential crisis. This is a crisis relating to the ability of the human species to go on existing on the planet. We did forget, because of the short span of human lives and I guess the inability to transmit transgenerational wisdom that fell off somewhere in the rise of the so-called middle class, we forgot to transmit our smarts. But if you just go and look at it, there are just little things you can go and look at. For instance, home canning. You know, the traditional ball or Kerr canning jars with the lids and the rings, and you boil them to make sure that they're sterile, and you boil the jars when they're full, and you make sure there's no bubbles, and that way you can have fresh, good food in the dead and still of winter. That came along in 1840. On the other hand, when you reach in the morning, say, for a jar of strawberry preserves, and you know there's a difference between preserves and jam and jelly, but they are all ancient food preservation techniques. Fruit preserves are a way to continue to be able to have fruit in the dead and still of the winter from a time back when we didn't put goddamn grapes on boats and sail them from Chile to Los Angeles. If you wanted to eat unseasonally, you had to do the work of making it possible, or you had to have someone close to you doing that work. Bacon? Okay, yeah, I'm not trying to piss off the vegetarians or the vegans or anything in the Horn family, and we have them, and that's not a criticism. Bacon is salted, cured pork belly that got hickory smoked or whatever, oak smoked, who cares, that got smoked and preserved via salt desiccation. Same with ham. The ham, the prosciutto of Parma, the Westphalian Schenken of Germany is magnificent, but it is a food that was born of necessity before everything was electrified, before coal and oil and gas were powering everything. But to hear the hydrocarbon industry tell it, if we don't use oil and gas and coal, well, we're going to have to go back to everything that our forefathers had and their hardships. Hardships? 100,000 years of human existence is hardships? And life has only been good for the last 150? My great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Alexander Kincaid, was a publisher in Edinburgh. And without so much as a lump of coal burning, or a gas flame, or gasoline, or diesel, or anything else. No fossil fuels at all. That man published the seminal essential thinking that lay behind the drafting of the Declaration of Independence. Perhaps the greatest lie of all is that we cannot be brilliant without fossil fuels, when the great sweep of human history says that that is an absolute miserable lie. And we do have technology now. That means we don't go back, we don't go into 150 years of retrograde motion. We don't have to lose air conditioning or the ability to refrigerate food. We don't have to. The wind and the sun are there just as they have been throughout the entire arc of human existence and well before it. But a great lie lays across this land. And that is, we are only great if we power ourselves through the engines of human oppression and personal destruction. Worth some thought, isn't it? I hope. About 20 minutes to go in the program. If you've got thoughts, share them. 304-574-8178. You are more than welcome to join in. Just trying to figure out where... where we should go next. Got a lot of potential. Oh, let's see here. Yeah. Every now and then, heroes pop up, motivated by one thing or another. Chris Hale is an example. He worked in the whitewater rafting tourism industry for 10 years. His very existence was tied up in the rivers needing to be clean enough to draw tourists to come and ride the rapids of these magnificent streams. Down in Alabama, there is a controversy brewing. A coal company wants... Wait. Let's go to the phones instead. Hey,
hello.
Hello.
Is this Bob Kincaid's show?
This is Bob Kincaid.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I'm getting stuff on the radio here. I don't know what's happening.
You have to turn your radio down.
Okay, hold on. Let me see. There we go. Okay.
All better now.
Good. This is Captain Mary in Memphis.
Oh, Captain Mary. So good to hear from you.
Good to hear you. I heard you lamenting the other night about people that make you feel like you don't want to be peaceful anymore.
Happens.
And that, yes?
It happens.
Yeah. It happens here, too. And that's, I guess, one of my biggest complaints about the corporatists is that they make me feel violent when that's against everything that I believe in.
and by saying against everything, I believe, it goes all the way to your core. I mean, all the way down to your toenails.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And so, I don't know, I just wanted, this is weird, Bob. I wanted just to say something gentle and peaceful. And I know that you don't hold with any religious stuff. And indeed, I'm an atheist when it comes to the smiting deity of the Jews and Christians and Muslims.
Oh, the great big juvenile, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky.
Right, that one, the one that with the big feet that smashes on everything.
Yeah.
And I'm an agnostic as far as local deities are concerned, for various reasons. And I'm a believer or acknowledger of what I directly experience. And some of those things that I have directly experienced are out in the garden this year. And we have had in the past two trees, an Althea, which is also called Rose of Sharon.
Yes.
And a dwarf cherry tree. And the Althea has called me. I don't know any other way to put it. It has called me when it puts out its first bloom. And it could be, you know, days to weeks before we go and look at those particular trees. But when it's put out its first bloom, it calls me. And I go and look, and there it is. And, oh, you've done so well. How pretty you are. And it feels so good.
It's moments like this, Captain Mary, that I wish we were doing video here, because I'm grinning from ear to ear. because I've got something similar. I've tried to get back to my roots recently of writing poetry, and I published one a long time back on my Facebook page, and it all has to do with this otherwise innocent little wild cherry tree that grows on the property line between me and my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And just by the happenstance of the way things grow, there's a series of limbs on this tree that I've been watching for years now.
Uh-huh.
And when you see it silhouetted with the moon behind it,
oh goodness,
and the leaves are on the tree, it's a horse.
Oh my goodness. Oh yes.
And one paw is one hoof is raised, and her shaggy tail is back there, and her head is held up and noble. You know the way the ancient Greeks did that sort of stylized.
Right.
She looks like that.
Oh my goodness.
And so I go out and speak to her just about every night. It's an amazing thing to see in the spring when she comes back, and then just to say farewell to her in the autumn.
Does she speak back to you, Bob?
I don't know, but I just feel drawn.
Uh huh.
And so
yes.
Yeah. And there's just something. Words escape me. I would say there's something peaceful, or there's something pleasant, or something satisfactory, but none of those words really work, Captain Mary.
It's something union.
Yeah. It's it is something essential. It is something of essences.
Yeah. Yeah, but the little dwarf cherry that we've got out in the backyard, and sometimes it would be months before we would go back there because here we are on the edge of the city and we're a wildlife preserve, okay? We're registered and all that kind of thing. So the backyard was a jungle, and just caves, green caves. And we recently, fairly recently, had it cut down so that we could grow food back there. But anyway, this little cherry tree called me when it was in full blossom. And I'd go out there and it looked like it was covered with snow. Just absolutely beautiful. And then there was another time when it was not blossom season and not fruiting season. But I was standing out there just being happy with it and feeling its leaves because they're so soft. And it gave me a feeling image of birthing. And it was just so amazing, you know, I can't go beyond that. Just to say it did that. and there it was. And this year, the corn that we grew, and we did not grow enough of it, because it's delicious, the corn, when it was at a certain stage, did not want to be touched. And I have never felt that from anything I've grown before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, none of the other things told me that, you know, mustard greens or tomatoes or whatnot. But It did not want to be touched at a certain period of its life. And then when the red beards started shriveling on the coin ends and it, you know, plumped out and said, hey, we're getting there, then that feeling went away and it was okay to touch the corn, but it did not want to be touched up until that period. And very strange.
See, I read, I don't think it's strange at all. I think it's just a matter of being open.
Consciousness is a given. Otherwise, we ain't.
And yeah, you have a probably pretty good working idea of my feelings about organized religion. But I had a rare opportunity. It'll be 2 years in January, for the first time in my life, to go out to the San Francisco Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
And nothing would do. And I'm glad that my friends who were out there said, "No, listen, okay, you know, you do what you do back in West Virginia. You need a cleansing, healing moment." And so they trotted my hillbilly butt out to Muir Woods.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a you know how it feels when you walk through a sheet of water? Like
yes.
when there's rain dripping off the eaves and you can feel the force of passing through the water?
Mm-hmm.
That whole forest felt like that. It was just vibrating.
Wow.
And I said then, and I maintain it to this day, I have been in St. Peter's in Rome, okay? But until that moment that I walked into Muir Woods, I had never been in a church.
I hear you.
And you talk about the corn. I had to give up gardening here.
Didn't have the ruthlessness for it.
No. There was just no way to deal with the deer, the rats with antlers.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And
well, we don't have that here. We got bunnies and rodentia.
Well, the last one I raised, when they took down 125 tomatoes and 72 hot peppers in one night.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it hurt.
Yeah.
So I haven't since then, but one of the more successful gardens, way back when the babies were little, I mean, our youngest Doodle, yesterday was her first day of her senior year of high school, and I've got photos of her and me and Margie and Ferg standing in the garden, and it was the best corn I ever grew. You mentioning corn made me think of this. The corn got up to 12 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
And it would crackle at night.
Yes.
You could hear the corn growing. And my baby, Doodle, is mortally afraid of this, to this day, of bees.
Hmm.
But I tried to have a transcendent moment with her, and she was so scared for me. She was standing outside the garden, and she said, "Daddy, don't go in the garden. The bees will get you." And I said, "The bees are not interested in me. Do you see these tassels? There is a party going on in here." And I had planted my beans alongside my corn so that the beans would climb the corn.
Right.
And the beans were so prolific, they were pulling over those 12-foot stalks of corn even.
Uh-huh.
But there, I mean, the corn part of the garden was singing, Captain Mary.
Oh, my goodness.
And I walked in there quietly, trying to be non-threatening, no swift motions. Almost like dealing with a cop. But I very carefully, and I did it so that Doodle could see me, I very carefully just extended my hand, extended my arm full out and tried to remain as still as possible. And Doodle watched as a handful of bees landed on me.
Uh-huh.
And they looked at me and I looked at them. And I guess they made a presumption that I didn't have anything they wanted. And then they, one by one, just took back off and went back to the corn tassels.
Delightful.
And went back to their song.
Delightful. Yeah.
I mean, it's out there. It's out there to be had and to be tapped. I'm watching some of my friends up in northern Wisconsin's Facebook pages. And my friend Mike Wiggins just posted something that was absolutely magnificent. He posted a photograph of an apple and some berries, and they're getting ready to get all excited because it's time to harvest the wild rice.
Oh,
And Mike just wrote on his page with a picture of some berries and an apple. He said, humbly, the spirit runner taking our people fishing and our orchards and berry farms producing colors are tiny stars growing. Mashkizibi is calling in all those things and more as we assemble ourselves for a long war. It will take time, but everything we need to kill the mine, because these are people who are threatened by a giant iron mine that's sought out by a coal baron from West Virginia. Everything we need to kill the mine is all around us. All watershed babies will grow and be healthier. War is about love and living and seeing, not death, destruction, and blindness. Pictured as a few pouches of berries, one apple, and a chunk of one fish, $25.43. Psh, he says. And there isn't even wild rice. Mashkizibi will defend our Manoman. We can't afford not to. Manoman powwow weekend, lots to be thankful for. And Manoman is the word for the wild rice in that language. And I see that kind of stuff, and I get chills, Captain Mary. I get chills.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and this is my opinion, that everything is conscious. Yeah, sometimes I'm not in tune with that, but I really believe that, you know, the atoms go down as far as you like. I think that there's.
Oh, I can get in a real just.
No, dear,
philosophical, philosophical mess. Just thinking about the fact that I am you. I am not. You are not. No one is a solid. The idea of solid is illusory at best.
Right.
Because
right.
We're more the space between the atoms than we are the atoms themselves.
Yeah, my dad was a physicist and a chemist, among other things. He was also a military man who came home very much in favor of peace. He fought in World War II. But he tried to give me a good science education. He really tried. I think the best he did there was introducing me to the ways that different things burned in different colors. He would take me out to his lab in the back of the house and burn copper or lithium or whatnot for me, and I would see these beautiful colors and think, wow. But outside of giving me a book on how to speak scientific Russian, he never got any further with me, and it was Mom who took over with the languages.
He got as far as he needed to get.
I reckon.
Apparently.
I reckon. They were good folks, both of them.
Indeed. Captain Mary, what a joyous way to close out the program this evening. Thank you so very much for what you've brought. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Have a gentle, wonderful evening.
I will certainly try, and I think it's a lot more likely now than it was before, and I'll go out and speak to the horse for you.
Thank you.
Bye now. Captain Mary, calling from Memphis. Thank you, Captain Mary. Thanks, everybody, for all of your ideas, your conversation, your communications, your participation in the chat room. Thank you for your emails and your tweets and your Facebook postings. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for your kind contributions that help keep us on the air. We'll try to pick up where we left off tomorrow. We got down to $110 to go, so that's not terrible. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Yes, thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.ORG. Thanks to Chris Hale for joining us in conversation this evening. It was a rare treat. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.